Live from the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, to our men and women around the world and all the sailors at sea, it's Film Grok. And now, Serge Delpierre.
Why, thank you, Jim Usterman, for such a wonderful introduction. And we have a with here too, also, is...
Oh, yes. That would be me.
That's you, yes.
Duncan K. Fraser.
Hey, yes, we're speeding this up here a little bit. Thank you there, Jim, for a fine, fine introduction. Our movie today is on Film Grok, The Book of Eli.
Dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun. Yeah, oh, it's going to be interesting. So right off the top, let's just do the cue point really quickly. The cue point is right at the end of the Warner Brothers logo. It's just as it fades to black, pause it there, and then when we're ready to go, I'll count down 3, 2, 1, play. And then you can hit play and listen to us in sync with you watching the film, or you can listen to this while you're walking the road to the post-apocalypse or something like that. So,
if you're listening to this in a post-apocalyptic world, God bless you for finding it.
That's right, or you suck because you have better things to do.
Yeah,
so,
for food.
Now we've all seen this, and this is not a classic film from the 70s or 80s. So to say, well, when was your first time? Well, the first time for all of us was basically last year. The only question is, how many times have you seen this film? And I'm going to go first on this one. But first, before we get started, spoiler alert! Ding ding! Lights are flashing and everything.
That means stop listening if you haven't seen the film.
Or if you've
just
seen,
to clarify, because
if you've seen the film, we're going to spoil the big twist right away. And we were talking before,
end.
And Duncan and I was talking to Jim. I don't know if Jim knows this or not, but we're going to basically see, and then we're going to take it from there. Anyway, I saw this on videotape. I missed it at the movies, and I'd read The Road by Cormac McCarthy, which I really liked, and I wanted to see the movie, but this came out first.
Is this based on
yes,
the book?
It did.
No, it has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
And The Road is actually quite a stunning book. It's hard to read, but it's a quick read, and I haven't seen The Road yet, of course, but I saw Book of Eli, so I'm watching it expecting that, and I knew kind of what Book of Eli was about, which was basically he's transporting a Bible. Okay, I got it. Okay, fine. And so I'm watching it, and I watch it on videotape, and I watch it, and I'm like, okay, and I get to the end, and I'm going to backtrack to what the spoiler is in a second. And then 10 minutes after the movie ends, I left, I'm like, okay, fine, then I had to go run an errand. And 10 minutes after, I realized, holy shit, the dude was blind. I didn't even know.
Oh, that was the I totally knew that.
You told me?
I did not get it.
See, when the book was revealed and was in Braille, I'm like, oh, okay, the dude can read Braille. Okay, fine, he can read Braille.
Oh.
It's a big deal. In other words,
I see.
And then we'll get to that at the time. In other words, how they directed it has to do with the clarity of the directing, and that's one problem I have with the film. I don't have a lot of problems, but that's one thing I had. But literally 10 minutes after, I'm like, he's blind? What the hell? So... I'm like, okay.
I see. And so, why you were saying, do you know the secret?
Well, that's what I was saying. You know, you're like, oh, okay. Because going into it, you have no idea that he's blind. But now when I watched it again yesterday, and I was like, okay. And I'm glad I did watch it again yesterday, because now I can watch it a third time with you guys and then kind of process it all together. Because yesterday I was watching for all the tells. And
right.
I'm like, I think I can see all of them. But then on top of that is the whole thing is that when you're watching the tells and you realize how divinely inspired the dude actually is.
Right, exactly.
Which we'll get into.
Exactly.
So that was my experience. So for some reason, dude reads Braille. Okay, fine, whatever. He could read Chinese for all I know. It doesn't make a difference.
It would have been actually, that's interesting. It would have been maybe a little nicer if the directors had sort of pointed up or done a little bit of a red herring and said the reason this book has existed is because no one knew what this book was because they can't read it. It doesn't have text. I mean, you could have played that up as the reason this is the only copy that still exists.
You could, except for the fact the cover has a giant cross on it.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of gives away, right?
I mean,
right,
he's basically hidden it. I mean, and then he explains later on, when we get, we'll get to that, he explains that he found it. It was like, obviously, he was divinely inspired to like find it because he was already blind. And actually watching it this time, and we'll get to it too, and they do the push-in at the end when he's reading the first part from Genesis, and it ends in and then there will be light, and you realize, now watching it, I can see, okay, now he's actually talking about when he was outside, and he actually got blinded and the whole thing. So
right.
Which I thought was really good. Only the tell, whatever it was that needed to express it to me and say he is blind was not clear. So that was just my experience, and we'll talk about it more later.
Now,
so.
Since they held the blindness back, do they say how he was blinded?
Oh, no, he explains at the beginning, basically.
Oh,
when he
opening.
When he talks to Jennifer Beals. But we'll get to that in a second. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, so now when you saw, when did you realize he was blind? Like right at the Braille part?
No, actually, when he first had his confrontation under the bridge, I started to suspect.
Holy crap.
Why? What about that?
I feel dumb.
No, I don't remember why I started to suspect, but that's where I was like, there's something weird about this. He seems bizarrely still, and as it was not an Asian, you know, ninja movie, I'm like, okay, something's weird with this guy. Somehow he's sensing where these people are. And then it just clicked to me that he's probably blind,
wow.
You know, not sighted and has heightened senses.
Wow. Well, I get the heightened sense thing. Yeah. I didn't get the blind thing. Duncan, how about you?
I didn't realize he was blind until the giveaway at the end, the intentional.
The Braille?
Give.
Okay,
yeah.
You got that, yeah.
When they did, you know, the full, like, close-up on him and stuff, and it was like, oh my gosh. Like, at first, too, when Gary Oldman opened the book at the end,
mm-hmm.
I thought for a second, because it was a far enough away shot, that it was blank pages, like he had switched it somehow.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But then when they showed it, I was like, oh wow, yeah. But I just didn't get the blind thing at all. And that I noticed kind of something what you were talking about, Jim,
mm-hmm.
with his movements and mm-hmm. the way he sensed things. But given that he's sort of a mystic, sort of prophet type mm-hmm. in the film, I kind of attributed it to that slash a sort of samurai calm kind of thing.
Sure.
I mean, because he's using basically a sword. I mean, it's a big enough machete to be a sword. So,
yes.
You know, and it does conjure up ideas of the whole, you know, extrasensory perception that a lot of the, like, extreme martial arts guys have.
Sure, yeah.
So that definitely, so I totally, it definitely looked different. But I did not get the blind thing.
Right. I mean, that, and I was the same way. I mean, I got that, oh, okay, he's a cool dude, so he, you know, he is slightly extrasensory.
For some mm-hmm. reason, it very much reminded me of those blind samurai stories.
Mm.
You know, I mean, right away,
oh,
I was
oh, I
like,
see what, oh.
It felt like that to
interesting.
Me.
You know, and I've never seen, I know there are some of them, and I've been meaning to see, but you're right. Okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can name one that I actually...
I know Takeshi Kitano is like in one that I've been meaning to see. That I don't remember what it's called.
Who is that again? Is he famous in
Japan?
Japanese film?
Hopefully I said his name right. He's in Battle Royale. That's where I got to know him.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's, yes. Yeah.
But the,
he's the announcer.
No, he's the teacher.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I've seen him in other films. He's mm-hmm. like a big Japanese star.
The one I was thinking of, maybe corny to you guys, but it was Blind Fury. And it starred Rutger Hauer. It was made in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Blind Fury.
And he plays like a pilot, an American pilot, who's shot down over Vietnam. And in the process of the crash or something, he's blinded. And he basically gets befriended by these, you know, Vietnamese swordsmen types that just live in the jungle that don't have affiliations. And they just sort of take care of him and he learns.
Holy
moly. And then he has this cane, has a sword hidden in it. I need to watch that again. It'd probably be hokier now, but...
I'm sure it is.
But
I want to see it
now, remember him doing a great job of seeming like a blind guy. But like a lot of people that I talked to watched it and was like, oh, a blind person can never do that. Well, you don't know. I mean, I'm not blind. They have heightened senses. If you trained enough, maybe.
Maybe.
Right. Well, that was the whole point of the blind samurai mm-hmm. films was, and there was a series of, I mean, that is a, I don't want to say comic, but there have been several of them, the whole blind samurai film. So it is.
And I think it's a book series as well.
Okay. Well, then there you go.
Yeah.
So it is a genre.
So,
it is a genre, so to speak. So this does follow in that genre. And so this crossed it, but they chose not to reveal it, to make the reveal. See, that's interesting, because now what they've done is, and this will lead right into then what you're going to talk about briefly, Duncan, and then we'll start the film, is that it took essentially what was a common genre, let's say in Japan, where it did have to do with extrasensory, you know, being very in tune with the world around you, and then turned it into essentially what it suggested was a spiritual mm-hmm. religious thing, that it wasn't just that actually he had someone watching out for him on that religious level.
Mm-hmm. Well, most martial arts, if you look historically, were mm-hmm. tied somehow into religion. And, you know, if you remove the idea of technology and the whole philosophy of humanism, which is only a recent invention, really, in history, you find a lot of things that are, you know, tied together with religious concepts, and warfare was certainly one of those. Right. And even nowadays, even in some Western special forces stuff, I know some guys that have told me some, you know, tricks they learned mental control tricks on other people that you can only describe as supernatural or sixth sense related or something.
Right.
So, and I've actually done training to begin to teach you how you sense where people are, and you do it enough times without looking, you do get an idea without hearing even of sensing the proximity of a person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this, it's not far-fetched, but I will say his statement at the end where he's doing his final monologue, and he says, you know, he's talking to God, and he says, "I thank you for all your miracles along the way." Well, every single time a dude comes at him with a chainsaw or a group of people tries to get him and he beats them all without taking a hit, right, that seems like a miracle to me.
Well, that's,
I mean, it's
but that's the point.
Divinely,
yeah,
connected, I think.
Well, exactly.
In the quest.
And as we go through, I think, I'm like, I started parsing it last time and I'll be like, okay, this is where that is. But it became more obvious this time, last time that I watched it, what that was. And, but also, I mean, you know, what'll be interesting too as we get started in just a moment is, and I know you and I, well, we haven't talked about it, but I know when you texted me, "Hey, we have to do this film," I'm like, "Oh, that'd be a good idea." But, you know, I don't think we're going to shy away from the, you know, pointing out how this kind of dovetails with, I guess, a Christian point of view of the world.
Yeah, I definitely want to get into that,
right,
because it's just an obvious, like, element of the film, and I think it'd be interesting to kind of explore that.
Mm-hmm.
That
not,
angle.
Not only obvious, but a little bit hard, heavy-handed, in my opinion.
It, you know, and that could be argued, for sure. And two, I want to talk about, I graduated from Asbury College, which is a Christian school in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And through there, they have actually a very good media communication program that's only growing. And they have, for instance, extended study programs here in L.A. about films where you get to do internships at various companies. And they have their own sound stages there and everything. And one of the classes we took was on basically how do you combine your religious faith with filmmaking. And I think the clear mistake that many of my brothers and sisters in Christ, if you will, make when they're trying to make films that have Christian stuff in them is they are too heavy-handed, mm-hmm, like you're saying. You know, it gets preachy. You have, you know, elements that are too obvious. And they're also not willing to take risks. Because the thing is, if you're going to tell a message at all in a film, it's got to be a good film first. You got to make people want to watch it for some reason.
Well, I think that's true of any film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, exactly.
I mean, regardless.
Any message you want to put in a film,
right,
you're not going to get people to pay attention, and they're going to think it's dumb if you don't make the characters believable and relatable, and if you don't create a story that people want to be a part of, mm-hmm, you know? And I think this does a pretty good job of that. But I agree, there are some parts in it that are a little bit like, well, that was kind of obvious.
That's interesting. And I'd be interested to find out what you think, what parts those, mm-hmm, those are.
And conversely, though, this, though, is if you look at it from the perspective of, like, a Christian film, and I don't know the people who made this. I haven't done research on who they are.
Right.
This does, I mean, it's an action film that has religious stuff in it, as opposed to a religious film that tries to be an action film.
Right.
Now, this is the Hughes brothers, isn't it?
It's the Hughes brothers who haven't done a film like this, but what did they do? They did what is From Hell?
Yeah, From Hell.
They did From Hell. They also did a really good. What was it? The one. Oh, I can't remember what it is. Not Boys in the Hood. The other one. But it was a really good film. But I don't think their first film was.
Shoot. Give me a moment.
We'll let you know. But we'll keep on going.
But the Hughes brothers are biracial. They're black, and their mother is Iranian.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I don't know how that colors their perspective on this material.
No pun intended.
Oh, no pun intended. Pardon me.
But, we're all different colors, Jim.
Yeah. But it's... And I don't know if it's worthwhile to mention our own personal backgrounds, which, of course, will color the way we see this film.
Right, of course.
Well, I'm the resident Jew.
Yeah. And I was raised strictly Catholic and am as atheistic as a Catholic could possibly be.
Fascinating.
You know, with all the dogma programmed into me.
And I'm about as agnostic as most Jews are, American Jews, North American Jews are these days.
I will pray for both of you.
Oh, thank goodness.
Gee, thanks a lot.
I would never refuse anyone praying for
me.
That's my philosophy.
No, but that's interesting because when I was watching last night, and we were going to start in a second, I'm going to raise a road. But when at the end, when Gary Oldman says, "Pray for me," I was just like, "What? How evil can you get?
Well,
how evil can you really, 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 really get? I shoot you and kill you, and I'm going to ask you to, you know, I mean, I understand the how deeply spiritual that just kind of like cuts to one's morality to even say that. I don't know.
Yeah, that is an interesting discussion. I don't think we should get into it in the intro because we can talk about it in the context.
That is another good topic
to cover because I have an opinion about that.
Well, that's good. And, this is all good. Yeah. All right, so you're Jim's looking up
the Hughes brothers,
but yeah, I'm going to get ready to go because we got to get going. But this is fascinating. We could keep on talking.
Yeah, I know, right?
That's the whole point of this. Right. Okay. Yes. All right. Remote is in hand. It is raised. It is pointed towards the DVD player. I will count down. So Jim's making a motion to me, too. Okay. All right. I can get going. So 3, 2, 1, play. Oh, by the way, we opened a fortune cookie, which we might make a ceremonial thing.
Yes, I brought.
That Duncan brought, and it says...
And this is supposed to be related to the film, by the way.
Related to the film, and just by chance. It says, you are entering a time of great promise and overdue rewards. So that's the fortune cookie message for...
The Book of Eli.
Here we go. here on Film Grog.
Here on...
Anytime you talk about religious stuff, though, it's a lightning rod.
Do we have to make these up?
So maybe.
Are these copywritten, these fortune cookies?
Yeah, I don't see a copyright symbol. I don't see a company.
You don't need
name.
A copyright symbol for anything published, but that's a whole other thing. Okay, so.
Ooh, there's a little bit of knowledge that the audience probably wants.
What?
You don't need to actually put the copyright symbol on there?
No, whenever you write something, it's automatically copyrighted. Now, if you want to litigate something, it's a whole different tale. Okay, now, what is this beginning? Can someone please explain to me? I get the rest of the film, but I get that it's falling ash from the sky. And this guy probably shot himself.
Well, or he was in a firefight and lost.
But why open the film with this? Usually I'm pretty clear on why films open on what. But this one, even though it's intriguing and they track past it and all that, and he kills the cat.
Well,
I haven't brought it together as to what this beginning actually means.
For me, the opening of a film should set the pace and the feel for the rest of the movie.
But also the theme and... suggest right. what's going on.
Well, and I think the theme of this whole scene, opening scene, is survival. The man who's dead clearly did not survive, yet he had a weapon, so it seems obvious to me he tried and failed.
Okay.
Here's a cat who's barely surviving and is about to survive by, you know, taking something from the dead guy. And then the unseen person, as we pan over, who is in turn going to survive by... taking the cat out.
We're steady camming over, yeah.
Right. It's survival. It's also, there's clearly, it's an atmosphere of death, and something very big and bad has happened. That seems pretty obvious.
But I take this to be right before the events. So, you know, this is in the course. In other words, this didn't happen a year ago. This happens like now, and then we continue with the film. And this leads us up to this guy, and we don't know what he is, and it introduces it visually. But why a forest? This is the only time we ever see a forest. It's the only time we ever see ash falling from the sky. This stuff never comes back. Everything else is just basically sunbaked. We never see him in a mask again. So either it's a cool beginning with actually no underlying mythic meaning, or there is one that I'm not getting. That's a CG cat, by the way. Mm. It's a really good one. I don't know that one. Well, the wider shot was. Oh, that was cool. That clearly was... They didn't kill the cat.
Good CG.
Now we know that,
You know what I took, though, from this is that this was perhaps years previous to the rest of the story. Because this gives the impression of something that maybe just happened, you know?
This is right when the apocalypse happened, is perhaps, what you're suggesting.
Or if it isn't, then he's clearly in a different place because, you know, he's coming out of woods and into desert, as you pointed out.
Well, that's the thing. Okay, so maybe that's the whole point, is he's coming out of the woods and into the desert, because then now, see, this is, we have this scene, and now we're all into desert for the rest of the film.
Right.
Now, what's interesting about that whole scene, that person was...
Blind.
Well, but...
Right.
The behavior was decidedly not blind.
Well, that's the point, is during the whole film, now, that's where I started watching, that's where you start looking for the tells, is like... How did he? Now, I mean, that's what I do. Is you watch for all the tells,
right? But I mean, show you could see that as he picked up the cat, he was holding the cat in a crouch position, right. Looking at the cat, turning it over.
But that's
and then wipe, what, decides well, that's what to I wipe wanted. It off.
Now, I know sometimes he does some things so that he can smell them. If you look carefully, and it's just he does it very subtly, or maybe to just touch some things. But he also, I understand why he's hiding, why he's blind. Also, he uses his eyes all the time. Go ahead, Duncan.
I was just going to say, I think that's the first example of a miracle that we see in the film, because the way he was positioned with that bow, he wasn't even standing and holding it. He was positioned in such a way that there was no way for him to aim anywhere other than where he was pulling it back from.
Well, exactly.
And so the cat had to line itself up with where the arrow would have gone.
Now here, look, it's like he stops and then either he smells or he senses. So
right.
he comes in. And of course,
he
tapped the door,
like to see what it is. Yeah,
right. Now he can tell that there's something there, but he's not quite sure. But he reaches down, he's looking for shoes, and he knows to look down there for
right. And he wouldn't have to feel if he could see
right
if there were boots.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he uses his expressions, I mean, in the way in terms of he's still acting like he can see.
Yeah. The whole thing really doesn't come together for me unless I add in the element of it being supernaturally assisted.
Well,
you know, I mean, like divinely helped in every turn, because I guess physically, and of course none of us have ever lived blind,
right?
But physically it seems nearly impossible the level that he achieves.
Well, there are some things that he does. That he does do by smell or by touch, and those you can see.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the things that he does do with the help of divine assistance. And so here, he kicks open the door. I know I don't want it to turn into like, oh, this is where he hears it and everything, but I think
right.
for as a beginning exercise to just get a feel of it, he is listening.
Right, because he clearly can see. If he could see, he could see inside the door.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. He just kicked it open and he listened. He stopped for a second.
Yeah.
One part that I'm not sure, maybe it's the smell thing because it's in a closet. When he opens the door, he's startled as though he can see, and he brings his hands up even.
Oh, that's right. Well,
I want to add one more just general concept real mm-hmm. quick about this, and that is that we have to point out that he was about 30 years old, he reveals later, when he lost his sight. So he had already lived a long life with sight. So it would stand to reason that his mannerisms, his head movement, and all of that would have been more like a seeing person.
Right.
Whereas he's had enough time now to incorporate the fact that he's blind, that he would have to adapt to that. Unlike a person who's born blind, whose mannerisms, they mostly have a head down kind of thing. They don't really eye contact. They don't turn their head like they see things because they never have.
Right. Yeah, he basically almost looks where he hears the sound and where he can...
Mm-hmm.
But his eyes don't wander if you watch. I mean, his eyes are really directional in this.
So, you mean he turns his whole head?
Well, mm-hmm. for example, the first person he really talks to without his glasses is Tom Waits' character, which comes up in a little bit.
Yeah. Menace to Society, by the way, was the
Menace
film
to
you were
Society
looking for.
Was a really good film.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I remember the actor who played the really bad dude was really good in that. Okay, so here he opens the door.
Oh, the door fell off.
Because the door falls off. That's right. And see, that's why he's laughing. He's not mm-hmm. laughing because of the guy there. Oh, wow. But he smells them. But mm-hmm. it's like he knew also. He knows that there's... He probably smelled them before. But you see, he feels him.
Mm-hmm.
But we think he's feeling... Okay, all right. You see, it's starting to come together. Oh, man. Ugh. But it's interesting because it has to do with how, you know, it's about magic. I mean, it's like a magic trick.
Just about.
It, you know, the first time you do it, you can't tell the magic trick. Then when you see the movie again, then it's a matter of understanding how the magic trick was done. But in constructing the movie in the first place, you've got to be aware of all these different things. Did you see he's wearing foil around his feet?
Or was it saran wrap?
It was some sort of plastic.
I never noticed that before. Yeah,
I noticed that right off, and I was thinking that would hold in so much moisture. You just got to wonder, like, that whole philosophy of, like, how to keep your feet healthy when you're walking constantly in a desert environment, like, how would that work? Because you would want to maybe keep in moisture, but then you'd have to be careful you didn't get, like, foot rot.
Yeah, you don't.
You know? Jungle rot.
Interesting. Now, the other thing, of course, is, you know, once I realized 10 minutes after the movie was done and I started processing the whole thing, I realized, well, that's why it took him 30 years to cross the country.
Right.
I'm like, why did it take you 30 years to do this? Well, of course, because you're blind. Oh, no, this is the first time we see. When he's looking in the direction of the mouse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm curious, when he was doing this part, how did he actually act it so that he could, you know, play the blindness without seeming blind?
Right.
Because he had to play this.
Well, you know, obviously other people have researched and practiced to play blind people before. And most of the time it's from studying people who are blind.
Right.
But I kind of wonder, again, I think his study would have been somewhat different for two reasons. One, again, he was an adult already when his character lost his sight.
Right.
And number two, you know, he's also taking direction from the director to...
I thought you were going
to
say direction.
To not give it away.
I thought you were going to say direction from God to not give it away. Yeah, right. the real director.
Yeah, from the director.
Look
at physical director.
Look,
yeah.
I like how they suggest, you know, look at all those scars,
massive
man.
Burns and scars.
Right. Wow.
And how about that, a world where a KFC wet wipe is like a valuable commodity,
okay.
Right?
KFC wet wipes are not going to last 30 years. I'm sorry.
Well, they could have been sealed in something.
You
I mean,
don't know.
Wet wipes, I've kept wet wipes before. After about a year or two, forget it. I think it was pointed out that was like a little flaw in the logic of the film I went and read somewhere. I like the idea.
I mean, who knows where he found them, though? Maybe they were sealed inside of something that used to be a refrigerator or something.
Sure, we don't know the previous adventures of Eli. Which, by the way, you know, we never hear his name in the whole film. The only reason we know his name is Eli is because when she opens his bag and sees the thing that says, "Hello, my name is Eli."
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the only way we ever really know what his name is. But no one ever calls him by his name.
Well, I guess titling the film that and then just having that one thing was probably enough. It's not like we lost something about the character.
Oh, no, I just think it's interesting that no one, you know, he never says, "My name is." Mm. And so here he's reading again. So
now that's the only time we see the scarring, is it not?
Yeah. Well, okay, that's all we needed to see was just once.
No, I was just thinking in terms of a makeup.
Oh, yes. Yes, no. you are right. It's the footprint in the snow, Trey's footprint in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, here, it's the sun on his face as opposed to he saw the sun.
Right.
let me tell you, for like an hour is rolling this film around in my head. And now here, he doesn't see the thing flashing. It's just him.
But he's hitting buttons.
He's hitting buttons so he can hear it, and he knows that it's running down.
See in there, that shot.
Yeah.
Very obviously moving his eyes around what seems to be looking at things.
Well, that's the whole thing of directing his eyes, I guess, to where he's focusing his
But again, I think that idea only works given
awesome shot.
given the presupposition that he wasn't always blind.
Okay, when the blind samurai films.
Unfortunately, I haven't seen them enough. I've seen one, but I mean, I haven't seen them enough to.
I think, if I've ever seen any part of it, the whole idea is that, you know, they can't see, and see the usual depiction of a blind person is in, you know, the Stevie Wonder type of thing.
Yeah.
No someone disrespect to Stevie Wonder, but someone who's been blind and doesn't, you know, in other words,
a lot
you
of
don't,
head
don't,
movement,
you don't
a lot
know,
of, not a lot of
basically, your head movement's not directed like you are a seeing person, but like you're.
Right.
Because the thing, when you're blind and you're just using hearing, you turn your head so that the ear is pointing to the source, whereas when you see, you turn your face toward the source.
That's the difference, because what he's doing is he's pointing his face towards a source of sound.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, he was smelling. Oh, these guys. See, he even says it. He smelled us from 30 feet away. Okay, so he was smelling.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. In terms of the hearing, he doesn't turn his head to hear in this film ever once.
Right.
So because
he directs
his
head.
It's a tell. And the way I took it is that, well, he can't let anyone know that he's blind because then he's a dead meat.
Well, that too, right? Like, in that world, you couldn't show any weakness.
Yeah. And he probably knows that it's dark back there because it was probably cooler.
Right.
So
a lot cooler.
And so he knows it's dark, so he's like, well, I'll back up. And then, of course, he might have a voice in his head telling him what to do.
Perhaps,
I'm sure it was echoey as well.
So he knows,
Well, and it makes sense because if you can't see, if you can't see, but your opponents can, it makes sense to take them into darkness where you take away that advantage.
Of course.
Right. But I'm like, this is, of course, this is, he's awesome in the summer. It's like he's really serious.
Right.
You
and it's not,
on me?
It's a courtesy notice. Oh, you know, okay. It's not even like, I'm threatening you. I'm just letting you know, if you touch me again, you're not getting it.
Boom. Great visual. Quick. Great visual effect. And, I mean, just great stunt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these people are...
They're like, wait a minute. Wait,
whoa, what the...
This is the stupid part. It's like, go get him. It's like, well, we got to fight the guy that just cut off your hand. Well, okay. Oh, that's... I mean,
yeah, I love that shot. Love that shot.
It was a really good performance of his in this film. And brilliantly choreographed, much less executed with the visual effects, because there's a lot of visual effects going on here.
That'd be like the easiest thing to be able to tell where it was, is the chainsaw, because you can hear it.
And he did, oh man.
And beautifully shot. The shooting that scene in silhouette was beautiful and effective.
All in silhouette. Well, of course,
and it's so very forgiving in the terms of choreography.
Yeah, very.
Yeah, makes it definitely.
So I'm just going to move it to the side.
You're not getting the hand back. No. Now, this was interesting. If you can explain, if someone can explain this, Duncan.
What's that?
How he kills him.
Right. Well, okay, think about this.
Why doesn't he just like let him die?
There's no 911.
Yeah.
There's no medical help.
Right.
Even if he did a tourniquet on the thing, there's still infection.
Right.
It's merciful.
Okay.
He's going to die.
All right.
He lost a hand. Even if he survives, trying to survive in that kind of world without one hand, he's going to die. And he did it in a very dignified way.
Right.
By the way.
I found it
to be very disturbing.
Well, it is because he got so close.
Right.
You know, it's almost like he's holding the guy.
Well, he does.
Like,
he puts his hand behind the guy's head.
Right.
He comforts him essentially.
Right. Well, and he was already in shock. From losing the limb and the blood.
Yeah, that he was.
I mean, he probably would have bled out, but again, I see it as a mercy.
Okay.
Remind me not to lose my hand around Duncan.
Well, certainly not in a post-apocalyptic world.
If you try to kill Duncan, if you're trying to defend Duncan, Duncan would do everything to try and help you.
Absolutely.
And help you survive. The point, and I think also his point is in terms of morality thing, that this guy, even if he stuck around, would try and kill other people.
Right.
It's a mercy on the world to get people out of the way.
That is a good point as well. He's a hijacker and a parasite.
Right. But he does.
See, now this tells who he is, what kind of person he is.
How so?
Because she's now alone out there. Clearly, he could overpower her if he felt like it.
Right.
He could take whatever he wanted, and he chooses not to. He doesn't even kill her. He doesn't harm her in any way.
No, he doesn't. But he does ask where her water is, and he does smell it, and then he just leaves it.
Right. But, you know, part of, I think, him leaving it is also so that she can survive.
Right.
There's really not much of it.
Oh, in other words, he was judging how much water there was in there.
And how far it is to the next place. Right.
Got it. I like that there's a sign on the ground. Of course, I didn't notice because it's the third time seeing it through. But later on, when he's... Oh, I love this. I like this. When she says, "Can I come with you?" He says,
no.
But there's a sign on the road because later on when they come to, you know, towards the end, when they come to the house with the people and they said, "Didn't you see the sign that said no trespassing?" He said, "I must have missed that."
Right.
And I'm like,
that's crazy.
So in other words, he doesn't see signs. Now, this is interesting, of course, because obviously through hearing it and whoever, you know, God telling him, don't walk one more step further.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't fall into the abyss, which is echoed towards the end when they're driving on the bridge and Mila Kunis at the last second breaks and, you know, keeps from diving into San Francisco Bay.
Right. Now, this is interesting that he hears voices, so he gets down
as
though he's watching.
No, but, he, but well, that's the whole thing.
But really, it's just
down
he knows that it's cover.
He doesn't want to be seen. Yeah.
Right, he doesn't want to be seen.
And he knows what the world's like.
Right. Now, here's a part that I want to review.
This is hard to watch.
How does he know it's the same guy later in the bar?
It is hard to watch.
Because he hears the voices.
Yeah, I'm not ignoring what you guys said. It is, oh, no. this is horrible. I mean, just the idea that humanity sinks to this level
given the circumstances. And then he says, stay on the path.
Right.
I mean, this is killing because he knows he could take them out, but...
Right.
And they hold on this. I mean, this is a good 10 seconds. Well, it was probably 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But he does know it's him because it's the voices, that's why.
And for all we know, he can smell them.
And also, for all we know, God told him to. I mean, if we take it to that extent, you see, and this goes back to what we were talking about before. My point about this is that, I mean, in a way, this is kind of science fiction.
I love the giant burned crater. Tells us a little bit more possible explanation of what happened.
But this is great. I love the fork in the road, and of course, you think he's making a choice, but clearly, he's
And he judges he judges what direction by the sun.
Does he? Or is he?
Well, yeah, because he turned his face toward the sun.
But Duncan, now I'm saying maybe
he's looking to God.
Maybe God tells him to go this way.
That's possible, yeah.
Because remember, let's go back to the fight. When he fought, I mean, he fought knowing where it was, but I think to a certain extent, I mean, if we're going to go whole hog on this,
mm-hmm.
I mean, God was guiding his hand.
Right, had to be.
Yeah. A combination. I mean, he was doing what he had to do, but he had to let himself... I mean, there is a certain amount of zen in it, too.
I didn't notice that J. Crew sign on the store to the left. That's real
here,
eerie.
He's walking among people. I mean, he's doing this all by his senses and by whatever divine help he's getting. I mean, you have to kind of take it into consideration.
Now, in light of him being blind, listen to the sound effects now.
Oh, it's great.
We're hearing the fire. We're hearing the stone being thrown, the baby crying, this thing going across, all of the tells and all of this, the things that are guiding him.
Technically, this is a great film.
Definitely.
Really well put together. And we get the sound cue of him going to the door with the bell. Good old Tom Waits.
He's one of those character actors that's hard to beat.
Did you hear, the shotgun sound?
Yeah. I like how he steps in closer and boom, they sped that up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just a few frames.
And then, but it's very effective. And this is where we're introducing, writing-wise, we're to introduce the whole idea of the hands, not whether they're shaking, whether you eat people or not. Which, of course, we're introduced to the concept with the people at the bridge, when she said they were going to,
basically
mug you and then eat you.
The shaking of the hands is
now,
the tell.
They reveal that later. I didn't get that from this on my first watch either.
I got it a part of the way through. Well, no, you get it when you see the old people at the house when he says.
Right, that's when they actually point it out.
Yeah, that's when he
and
says
talk
it.
About it.
I like here just like he's behaving with him. He's looking at him, and he knows exactly where to look, and he knows. He looks to his knapsack. That's the thing. He's very practiced in making it seem like he can see.
Right.
But then there's the tiny things. That's why I'm fascinated. I would love to hear him talk about his process in this film.
Even the wave of the hand over the flame.
Oh, right.
To check that it did light.
That it actually lit, yeah. But it was almost like it was presentation.
Yeah.
So it could pass.
That too, yeah. His wet naps. And he knows where everything is. Nice little performances.
I love how he never answers.
Oh.
And of course, until they come
sound
in.
Sound cute.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he knows that
right.
it's he's close enough that they were there, so he can right. piece it together, and with any help from, I'm assuming, God.
Well, not only that, but it just occurred to me that every vehicle in this supposed world would be not exactly... You wouldn't get a lot of similarity in engine sounds. Every engine sound would be a little bit different.
Right.
Because they've been tweaked and jacked and, you know, who knows what kind of fuel.
Holes and mufflers.
Right.
And, yeah.
Right.
What
Very
book is
unique.
He reading? He's reading Mussolini.
Yeah, Mussolini which is a great introduction to this dictator-like character. Right?
I never noticed that before. I got to say, Gary Oldman's a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily like his performance in this. I mean, he's a good performance.
He's never bad, but there are occasions on which he's great, and there are occasions on which he is stellar. And I think this one is one where he does, you know,
it's
a good job.
It's fine. It's fine work. Yeah. It's the character itself I don't find incredibly interesting. Oh, is that the Da Vinci Code?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right?
Man, that guy. Great character. Great face.
This actor.
He looks like Richard mm-hmm. Tyson, though Richard Tyson is actually much older now.
Well...
Well, I was going to say much older, but...
It's really interesting how they chose the books to be on the table right
well,
then.
Well, I don't think that... Oh, I see what you're
saying. I mean, what were the books they chose?
I mean, they probably are meant to be random. One was the Da Vinci Code. There's like a Time magazine. They're just different weird random stuff. But you got to wonder, like, what... what do you save? Like, you know, who takes what with them? And I find that fascinating.
I think there was an Oprah magazine, I think, or a magazine with Oprah on the front.
Yeah, something. Yeah. Stuff we would just consider to be like, whatever. But now it's like treasure, you know?
Well, that's the thing. World. It's like remnants of the old world in a way.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a dictionary also. Oh.
Wow.
That's a great learning tool.
Well, that's the interesting thing is he's only looking... This is where it falls a little thin for me. He's only looking for one book, and for the reasons, of course, that he wants to have the Bible so that he can control
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, like, says, throw everything else out. I'm like, what? I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
maybe it's... Well, first of all, there's the Oprah. Oh, and Frank.
Mm-hmm.
He says burn all the other books.
Yeah. Because,
you know what it is? I don't think anyone else knows how to read.
And well, that's the thing.
Mila Kunis' character does not know how
right.
to read.
It's been enough years,
okay.
you know, like 30 years since this apocalypse thing when there aren't schools around and stuff, and only the people who would have survived and been educated before that time would know how to read at all.
Unless you taught other people, and if you don't teach people, then they're
right.
ignorant, then you can control them, which
right.
is how he controls everyone by being the one person
mm-hmm.
who can read.
And it takes time to teach, you know? And
right.
it takes effort. You have to really... be on about that. I mean,
wow.
that's why our world went so many hundreds and thousands of years even without standardized mm-hmm. education where, you know, the general populace learned how to do things like read and math.
She is so lovely.
I love
mm-hmm.
Jennifer Beals.
Mm.
Yeah.
I know everyone was kind of like when Flashdance came out, that's a long time ago, and I was like, "Oh, Jennifer Beals." But I think, you know, you know, that was a thin type of film, but the stuff that she's done, I mean, she was on the L Word
mm-hmm.
for quite a while, but she's done other stuff and in this and all that. I just think she's a great actress.
Yeah.
Actually, she's on,
she's
on the Chicago Code now.
Yeah, yeah.
Which hopefully will last.
We'll see.
Well, this is interesting. So he's walking and we're through the bar. We're seeing, he hears a cat mule. That's the whole thing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He hears the guy drink. Oh,
right.
No. Wow.
See, the sound cues
totally
are really
very important. Because a lot of times when you do slow-mo like that, you do music over the sound.
Right.
You don't try to intentionally put
right.
in
sound cues. And it was not so that we could see it, so that we can get the idea that he's hearing those things.
Right.
Nice.
That's interesting that
at these
more civilized places, they don't serve cannibals. They don't deal with cannibals. You would think that there would be at least some. I mean, that suggests that there's something unique about them that makes them just unpredictable enough that they just don't want them around.
There's still some civilization, but also cannibalism drives you crazy. I mean, basically, it affects your
right.
Because you get a Creutzfeldt. What is it?
Oh. Creutzfeldt-Jakob's
disease. Yeah. Yeah, that's what you get. And that basically drives you crazy. Hmm. Well, it is. It's a disease of the brain.
Oh, it doesn't like him because it knows that he kills cats.
He kills cats. Well,
but I think that's an interesting supernatural sort of element because, you know, cats are used in a lot of different movies that in to indicate, like, they either sense supernatural stuff in different ways or they attack things. For instance, Let the Right One In. Cats would always attack the vampire.
Well, that's...
Constantine, completely different kind of film. He said cats are always half in and half out, and he used one to transport himself to hell.
Oh, that's interesting.
There's just a lot. And, you know, the whole mythology of cats in ancient Egypt being certain types of deities. So I just find it fascinating. It's just an interesting other supernatural element they added to this to, you know, that cats don't like him. And there's a practical reason. Maybe they sense that he kills them.
But as opposed to a dog.
Right.
Right. Because cats are different. I like your thing. Oh, this is cool. Another guy looking for trouble.
Right.
And he's just trying to mind his own business.
Right. See, and he's actually trying to avoid a fight.
He's always trying to avoid a fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right. And just emphasizing that he's not a predator, you know. We still don't know what he's doing. We still don't know what his deal is at this point.
We know he's a samurai. We know he's
right.
This does follow the whole samurai.
Right.
Well, I mean, essentially the idea that he's just minding his own business, but he can definitely defend himself. See, he says murder of innocent travelers.
And now he's starting to sound biblical.
Yeah.
See.
Yep.
And I guess maybe the fact that he didn't look at the guy when he slammed him on the bar should have maybe tipped me off that he can't see, but at the same time, that's sort of just a badass. I don't even have to look at you to swat you like a fly kind
of
thing.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. But you see, here, he's looking at him when he's talking to him.
Yeah.
But I like how the other guy's like, oh, yeah, I'm all right. And he just keels over and dies.
Right.
And,
probably gave him a concussion. Real good one.
Yeah.
He's like, well, now it's a thing.
Yep.
Uh-oh. Now it's a thing. Yep. That's a great way to put it.
Now, let's listen to the cues. Oh, so we can hear the footsteps, and he can... But also, I think God's helping him at this point.
You notice he was looking down at first, and then kind of around. He knows they're not coming at him yet, though.
I think it's nice speechifying. I think it's great, but these guys would have already come at him. They wouldn't have waited for him to be ready.
Mm-hmm. Although, you know, who's to say? Maybe part of life is about the performance of it.
That's true.
At this point, there's no entertainment.
That guy's head just came off. I never even saw that before.
Two guys' heads just came off.
Oh, wow. Well, because it all goes...
Three
heads.
Do you notice that during this fight, there are a lot of times he does stuff after people touch him? There are some times when he blocks a weapon, but there are many other times when someone touches him and then he does something to them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. I'd have to look at it again.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool. So that means, he's waiting for them to come at him so he can tell where they are.
And you can hear something whistling through the air. And if you're fast enough and you're practiced enough, you could tell enough where that is to put your weapon in the way of it, like a pipe flying through the air, or especially a chainsaw. It's already making noise.
Right. Oh, I see what you're... Yeah.
You know, otherwise, though, someone would have to put their hand on you or get close enough for you to sense.
There are heads on the ground.
Oh, man, four beheaded.
Now, wait. Can I backtrack just a second, Jim? You said, I think I was talking or looking at something at the same time. You said something about it's losing entertainment value at this point. What was that before the fight started?
No. I wasn't saying it was losing entertainment value. I said part of this life when there's no entertainment.
Is the fight itself standing and waiting? And,
yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying. The theatricality.
It's sort of like in medieval times.
Observation of the life around you.
It's sort of like... Mm. let's have a fight just to entertain ourselves. Right. Okay, fine.
Right. Kind of like the Irish.
Because there's nothing to do.
Or the Scotch.
And, you know, for again, hundreds and thousands of years, in whatever culture you were in, public executions were also kind of a place to gather and watch something interesting happen that's not every day.
See, yeah, now
that was life and death. We can't relate to that.
Now instead we watch TV and movies, and
right.
that's
and
what
we watch people pretend to kill each other.
Because what those things did is they gave us catharsis. Because they gave us a drama, they gave us a story, a narrative. This man did this, and now we've taken him, and we were at the scaffolding, and now he's going to die, and boom. And
there was always some kind of message communicated by that execution or whatever.
Executions were, you know, in the old days, it was their own reality shows.
Yeah, and you want to see how each person who's going to be executed is going to behave before they're executed. They're going to do the same thing after they're executed.
Will they be rescued? If there's going to be a rescue, will there be a riot? Will someone show up? You know,
yeah. Will someone try and be
going
defeated?
To cry?
Yes. Are we going to go down? Oh, let's not let the children come. Oh, no, let's let the children come down to the execution because there's nothing else to do. There's no TV. There's no radio. You can, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Interesting.
By God.
That's right. By who? He says by who. And then...
Correct him. Say by whom.
He's feeling the table.
He didn't say. Yeah.
Yeah. He acts like he can hear. It's amazing.
You mean see?
I mean, yeah. See. And he's deaf too. He's like Helen Keller. Now, this is another one of the things. And after I realized, okay, now when he was in the room, how did he figure out where everything was?
Well, first of all, he could hear him lighting a lamp.
Okay.
He could hear him futzing with that. He was next to the wall, so he could have easily felt where the bed was because it was right there.
Mm-hmm.
Feet, putting his hands on the bed.
Right. Such as it is feeling it out, seeing how it feels.
Now, see, and I took that in my first viewing to mean he's never felt a real bed.
Right. What's his mattress like?
Or something supposed to be.
Right.
Right. And now, so now here we get to see him with the real black. And actually, you know, the thing is that he hears her coming. That's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Water for washing, luxury.
I know. And what's cool about this is we get to find out that she's been blind all her life, but then we get to find out how people became blind.
Well, that's...
It's a good piece, a good place to put down the exposition.
Mm-hmm.
Necklace clinks. We're watching the subtitles. That's what it said.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can hear that there's something inside of his shirt when he messes up.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. Yeah.
That's interesting. He can tell she's blind.
How could he tell that she was blind?
Well, she said.
Did she say that?
She expressed, you need to make a noise so I can find you.
Oh, okay. Mm. That's what it was. Okay. And so it's magic. It's the, what do they call it? It's the, it's not the diversion. It makes you look over here. In other words, you're doing the trick with the left hand while you're doing something.
Sleight of hand?
Misdirection.
It's a misdirection.
Oh, misdirection.
This is the misdirection.
Yeah.
This is just like magic.
Right.
The misdirection. She's blind. Oh, he must not be.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
Oh, this film is full of misdirection.
Yeah.
It's brilliant in that sense. In that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a cool shot.
Mm-hmm.
Looking into the coffee that he can't see.
Coffee.
I don't know if it was coffee or water. Soup or water.
I thought it was water.
Yeah, I don't think they have coffee here.
I don't know. Oh, the water in the basin. Oh, yeah. I wasn't paying attention to what she had on her tray.
Yeah.
My daughter?
I really like her performance in this. Really mm-hmm. a lot.
Yeah.
Really is good.
Yeah, she does a real good job of the whole blind, like, eye misdirection thing.
Right, because in Cena, when she's blind, she's listening with her ears and not her eyes,
mm-hmm.
so to speak.
Okay. And this is also great. This is misdirection, too. It's like he's crouching to see the book.
But he was crouching to read it. But why was he doing that there?
So he wouldn't be snuck up on, I think.
Right. I mean, that's the one place that he can be in the room where they can't. Yeah, he's got the most advantage. He's already behind the door.
Right. Okay. I want to remember this for the day that I'm in this situation. Hey, these are survival skills.
You never know.
Heidi would love this. She'd be like, okay, this is full chock full of survival skills for the post-apocalypse. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
Jim is having a hot flash.
Jim, you like Mila Kunis or something?
I might, just a little.
You think she's a hottie?
I kind of think she's pretty special.
She's Jewish, you know that.
I like Jewish girls.
Okay, well, there you go.
I always have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh. What's that in the background over his right shoulder?
It looks like a door on a furnace, old furnace.
Oh, okay.
Or a boiler.
Yeah, probably a boiler.
This was this is a movie theater, I guess, because it's called the Orpheum.
Oh,
I never really thought
maybe
of that.
This is the projection booth, perhaps.
Ooh.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
projection. Well,
it is the. Yeah.
That could be the old, although it would be a really old movie projector.
Well, freaking filmmakers always putting film.
It was
stuff
a small town somewhere out west.
Could be.
They actually shot this out in New Mexico. This film.
Mm.
Yes.
So. Well, it looks like it's maybe like a Western town that they dressed up a bit to look like it used to be modern by putting things like that J. Crew symbol over the one place and, you know, certain other affectations.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Yeah,
but, look at this shot. That is one big Wild West.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, she's in petticoats and he's got cowboy boots on and...
Well, there is the Western motif, actually. There is a Western motif, which, of course, the Westerns back in the 60s did take on, you know, it was the whole thing with samurai movies riffing on Westerns and Westerns riffing on samurai movies. Well, like the Clint Eastwood movies.
Right.
They were basically remakes of Japanese movies, kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
The whole idea.
Interesting.
Well, that was how Westerns became, at least for that one. Oh, there you go, 30 Winters. Okay, he explains to her about how it was. Okay. I don't think he ever says how old he was.
No, he didn't
know. For the Flash. He says it's been 30 years since the Flash.
Right. He says, I really don't remember.
Right.
I think he alludes to it later
in
this conversation.
I like, you know, how he talks about... Mm-hmm. The world had more than it really needed. Three-way things, people kill each other, you know.
Like the wet wipes.
Well, yeah.
And the iPod.
See, I don't like her performance. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no.
I just don't.
She doesn't seem like she really lives in that world.
But this scene... is a little clumsy.
Okay, keep on going.
I don't think it's necessarily her performance as much as it was
bad writing.
I don't think the scene is particularly elegant. I think it's, you know, it's just it's a functional scene.
She's
doing
the best she can. Well, it is clumsy the way it's like, oh, I see the book. Well, I mean, the thing is, she was sent in to try and see what he had, if he had anything.
And she's supposed to persuade him to become part of.
Of their
Carnegie's,
of their
you
thing.
Know,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yes. Bad writing will always make a good actor look not so good. Okay, I'll cop to that.
Yeah. And I'm not saying Mila's an amazing actress. I've seen her do some very good work.
Yeah.
But, well, as is evidenced by her most recent performance.
In
Black Swan.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen it, but she's received amazing.
She's been very critically acclaimed.
But then again, the material, great material will always elevate an actor, and great actors will be able to make that stuff shine. Absolutely.
No.
Well, it's a holistic synergy. I mean, it all comes together to do that.
I mean, I think he does a great job with this. With Denzel Washington.
With the material?
With the material. He doesn't. Yeah. I mean, trust me, I've seen some pretty bad Denzel Washington films where the films were not good. And there's only so much you can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his earlier films, real stinkers. Mm. But he was a star.
And it's very few people who can just essentially stand in a black box and act without anything and be entertaining. Or compelling.
You almost
need
material. Yes.
Right.
Jim?
This is a pretty big scene here.
Well, he teaches
her something. She's never experienced anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
I get what he's doing, but in terms of the writing, I feel it's a little clumsy because then it's brought back because then she does it with her mother and then it tells what's his face that blah, 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 blah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's.
I don't like
it. And it's kind of heavy handed.
It is.
But.
Right. Well, they. Commenting from a Christian filmmaker perspective thing here, this is one thing. There are certain elements where I've been involved in Christian film contests before where the film that I was involved with was sort of looked down upon because it didn't include certain obvious elements. For instance, reading from a Bible, quoting scripture, praying out loud for the audience to hear, or praying out loud to God or talking to God. And this is one of those things that it's hard to put in a film without being heavy-handed.
But
I'm not trying to excuse it. But I agree that it is clumsy, and it does seem heavy-handed. I was kind of, when I saw this first, I was like, I get it, but there was something missing. Something just didn't click with it. It could have worked,
but something just didn't click. But here's, I know we have to gotta get the
and this, especially the follow-through.
Well, the follow-through is what I didn't like. I actually liked him doing that. I liked him.
It would have been nice if she referred to it.
Well, hang on. I liked him. I liked him taking her hands and praying before eating. I liked that. I was like, that's cool because that expresses what's part of him. But then they turn around and do it, you know, where she does the same thing with her mother and it becomes a reveal. And it was made into a thing, into a plot.
Plot device,
thank you, as opposed to just a character point, which I liked it as the part of the character point.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And I would like to have seen her more affected by it. Because she just went to Now We Eat, and she didn't.
Right. You know what? I'll go back even further and just say, like, a lot of times I go back to how they've built the character at that point. We haven't seen her interested in books. We haven't seen her interested in religious things or anything up to that point.
We just saw her
in the bar. Her to mimic this straight out, like it means something to her, seems abrupt. It seems like it is a little out of left field, even though maybe that incident did touch her in some way and it did affect her, clearly.
And that's the
It wasn't backed up.
That's the writing and the actor. Well, the writing, the actor, the editing depends what they left out because you always edit a performance, which may or may not explain a character point. So it may have been in and they took something out to explain blah, 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 and they felt they didn't need it. And it just feels truncated. I'm just like,
I agree.
I think it robs the power of what it is, you know,
yeah.
Because I am an agnostic essentially, but I don't mind that in there. I mean,
no,
absolutely not.
I don't mind the prayer in there. I would just like to have seen maybe a scene or something where she was considering it more, how it affected
but
her.
But you know what? Right. Quite frankly, her character, Solara, has no personality. It's not a well-written part.
True.
Right.
Or at least it's not well shown. As you pointed out, it could be the editing.
But
who knows what was originally there?
Well, but I think in terms of constructing everything, I mean, I think the mother... Even this guy has more written into his part than she does. She's just the daughter of the mother, so she has less to work with. So then, I mean, then it comes to, well, if it's not well-written enough, then how do you fill it out with what's not on the page? And that's where I think perhaps Miss Kunis was not as good as maybe someone else, at least in this particular part. Not that she, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, perhaps.
By the way, just I love Gary Oldman in this role, especially when he did the whole... you know, finished the prayer and said amen. It's almost like the devil finding out that you prayed in his house, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just very effective. I mean, this guy's such a dichotomy of things.
Well, I don't like his performance either. I mean, his performance, I don't like the character as he portrays it either. I don't know. It doesn't touch me.
Ultimately.
It doesn't touch me badly. In other words, it doesn't touch me in the sense that I like him or I hate him. I'm sort of like, I kind of sigh. I like Ray Stevenson better. I think Ray Stevenson inhabits his Now, how did he get out? Okay. That's the thing. You have no idea how he got out. Here he says he was on the door the whole night.
Well, it's easy for someone to fall asleep. And if you're blind and you're listening for things, it's easy to hear someone sleep breathing. He may have just walked out.
He may have.
That door may not lock.
But as an audience
everybody
member,
else
would
just
have been
kind
nice
of, you
to
don't
see
hear
that.
It locking.
Maybe,
I kind of agree, but I like the ninja aspect.
I'm going to go with the spiritual aspect.
Okay, we can do that too.
I'm going to say God said, look the other way, and he goes...
And well, and you know, there's an example in the book of Acts in the Bible where I think it was Peter, at least, or Peter and John were in prison, and an angel showed up and basically just said, here, take my hand, and walked them out of the prison.
Yeah.
And the jailer showed up in the morning, the door was still locked, they were gone.
I totally buy that. Exactly. Now, this is...
It would have been nice to see something
it
as
would.
An audience.
I agree. Well... Because it would have been nice... At least to get a better idea instead of having to fill in the gap yourself.
I didn't mind filling the gap. I didn't mind. I like the mystery of it. It's like, how did he get out? I like it.
It is cool. But again,
cool,
I think this
cool
is kind of
too.
This is kind of the same little flaw as the prayer thing, which is they didn't give enough of a little bit of a backstory or a little bit of an indication because we don't really know what this guy's about still.
Right, that's true.
We don't know that he's a prophet guy. We don't know that he's got God help. And that it's a big deal to him until the very end.
Right.
So, you know, it's only on the rewatch that we really kind of see it that way.
Right. Well, exactly.
And which is why we mentioned the blindness and the whole thing ahead of time.
Right.
So we could look at it.
And now this scene, you know, of course, there's all big talkie. And then, of course, comes the shooting, which is important. Now, the first time you watch it through, I'm like, and you were watching it, like, what the hell is going on? And, of course, watching it through the second time, you're like, holy crap, even more so than when he's basically taken out two, you know, guys in a circle. Now it's him essentially standing and basically bullets are whizzing by or even hitting him and not... Mm-hmm. I swear there's a bullet that hits him and doesn't hurt him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At one point.
Yeah, there is one. I think it hits his pack or something.
Whatever. And the point is that now this, you know, really if you're looking at it, you know, from, you know that what's going on, that he's blind and basically God's over his shoulder and... You totally see everything that's going on.
Can I just talk about this conversation real quick? This is kind of important because Gary Oldman is clearly an evil man. He clearly does many evil things and in a very selfish way, and he's clearly trying to get this book for selfish reasons, for control.
Yes.
Yet he's talking this whole thing, which is a classic, if you read the Bible, a classic thing for the devil to do, father of lies and all. He will talk this game about, oh, helping, well, they can help them, it can do this. He never once says, that's what I'm going to do. He says, the words can help them. That's not what he's going to do with it.
Right.
You know, but it just enhances his character even more, and it's almost like an epic spiritual struggle here between good and evil just in that conversation, with evil being the most sinister it can be in the guise of something good.
But he is human. He's not the devil incarnate. He is human, just touched,
exactly.
He's
just an evil man.
Well, it's all about archetypes though in a film, you know, where you've got these
I like
these
how he says shoot him please.
Feelings. Yeah.
He's just like and here we go.
And by the way, that's totally realistic. Not everybody can hit a target at that distance with that kind of gun freehand.
It is pretty far. Yeah,
no,
that's true.
I mean, that's 60 feet. 50 feet?
More than that. Yeah, see, it hit his pack. But still.
Oh, he said, God damn it.
Oh.
He swore.
Yep.
Took the Lord's name.
This is like is it like the Exorcist conversation? Look at this. And he's literally...
He's shooting where he hears the gunshots.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yep.
Okay. See,
but the fact that he, I mean, like, that's supernatural, that he can just kind of point it in the direction that he hears a gunshot and hit it.
When I watched it yesterday, I was just like, oh, God's totally telling him, over here.
Yeah, because...
But you're right, he is listening. He's even, not finding someone first, yes.
Even someone really, really, really good with a pistol would have trouble doing that.
Absolutely.
Oh. Well, exactly. So someone blind would have a very hard time doing that.
Yeah. Again, divine intervention, I think.
Well... Yeah. No, in the Exorcist, which you didn't do, Duncan, I pointed out that the only person who swears is Ellen Burstyn's character. And she swears a whole... I mean, she doesn't swear a whole lot, but she does, you know... She does take the Lord's name in vain.
Is she the mother?
She's the mother. She's the one who's having to deal with all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you just once you realize it, it's just you notice it across the whole thing. It's like, wow, it's not like she invited it upon herself, but it's just that I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but she's the one. It's interesting here that Ray Stevenson's character is just like, I can't shoot this guy.
Yeah.
I just can't. He realizes that was way too weird.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the context of watching it the first time, once again, talking about the magic of the film, we already knew that he had a Bible and that maybe God was helping him somewhat. So that, so God helped him somewhat with that, but only in his abilities. Of course, once you know he's blind, you know that God's really helping him a lot.
Right.
In that sense. Right. Yes, this is all misdirection.
Beautiful.
Oh, great. Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about the sky is that all that sky is CG. All those clouds.
Are they? Oh, hadn't thought about
that. Oh, yeah. It's got to be.
The art direction of this film, I think, is really excellent.
For
what it lacks, in my opinion, in perhaps the script, but some of the character-based directing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the visuals are quite impressive.
Oh, mm-hmm. and the cinematography is incredible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, visually and technically, all the sound work.
Yeah. Yeah, quite nice.
And the art direction, as often, often with most films like this, is always quite excellent.
Which makes me wonder, maybe the Hughes brothers, maybe directing actors or directing characters isn't really their strength. Not that I want to take anything away from them. I mean, I think it's a fine film.
We're talking about the sausage process once again. Some things, you know, some parts of it get messy, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes scripts don't necessarily, you know, scripts will start out with a producer and then they'll find a director and then you'll try to make it a certain thing, but obviously the producers have a hand. We don't know.
Right. The sausage process? I hadn't heard that term, but I kind of get
it. Hang on. Is that a guy?
Yeah, that's the guard. Mm-hmm. She took him to the water source.
Right.
Oh, I've never seen the guard before.
Yeah. I didn't notice he was alive before.
Wait, you've just watched this twice.
I know, and I've never seen the guard. Well, because he's lying on the ground. I was always looking up. I was always looking up at them. I never really looked on the ground. There must have been some scene, obviously, where they took him out. Or they just shot it like that. I don't know. And he's just like, oh, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help you.
Right? Man.
Yeah, medicine and...
Just the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It ain't pretty in the apocalypse.
Mm-mm.
Now, you see, this is where I think the writing could be stronger, too, because Ray Stevenson's character, I don't know what his name is. That's the bald dude back there. Obviously, he sees what Denzel Washington's character is able to do, and now he's listening to him. He knows that basically, he knows what he's saying. He knows.
Absolutely.
He sees what this guy's about. This guy's about power, obviously controlling people. And he's like, but then when he's all about, I want Solara. And I don't understand it. It's just like they could have taken him further, and they just didn't. It wasn't, I don't know, either not clearly written enough, but there was an interesting direction they were taking with him. Because they're taking, a minor character who's the chief henchman.
Mm-hmm. And you wonder at this point if he's going to, start to, wander to the good side or something.
He says
he's going to be noble, but then he says this.
Then I want Solara.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, I think he knows that this is going to be a campaign that will probably kill them all. I mean, I think part of his appreciation of what Denzel Washington's character is this man will probably kill all of us. Mm. I think he appreciates the character.
If we get in the way of him, yeah.
Right. Maybe that's why he's trying to convince shooting the guy.
Right, and that's why he's trying to convince him not to go after the book. So he's saying, if we do this, I want the ultimate prize.
Right.
The or most what valuable he considers the
commodity you have.
But that's the thing is he's treating another human being like a commodity. Like, I want that.
Yeah.
You know, that's my problem with it. It's like, oh, yeah, I want that person as my property. Like, you know, she's yours to dole out to me.
And rightly so, because it's a deplorable concept,
true,
owning a person. But at the same time, how would that not be the case in this kind of world?
Absolutely.
Because in this kind of world, life is cheap. If you can provide protection for people, how, I mean, that could easily be seen as owning those people.
Oh, yeah.
Because they leave you, they die, right?
And
you get to do whatever you want. There is no overarching government.
And,
you make it
and
up.
And what brings you the ultimate pleasure? What's going to
bring
me
you personally?
The ultimate, in well, this, no, in this, in this environment, what's going to bring you the ultimate pleasure? Well, it's going to be, like I said earlier,
safety, probably.
Well,
power
no,
and
no,
safety.
No. It's going to be another person. It's going to be companionship. It's going to be the entertainment value of another person. So that's the ultimate prize. And that's
right.
why I'm agreeing how people are going to own other people.
Right. Life is cheap, yet they're the most valuable commodity.
Right.
Yeah.
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 You can make them work for you. You could eat them if you needed to.
Right.
Isn't feudalism great?
I love that. I love that. Yeah, I know. Right? In the background, I love that like aircraft control tower that's sort of hanging out.
That's all CG.
Oh, I'm sure, but it's
amazing. Yeah.
Somewhat
yeah.
crucifix-like.
True.
Oh,
well, I guess getting the religious symbolism.
Waxing religious, Jim.
That's right.
We'll rely on you for symbolism since the Catholic Church is more expert on that.
Truly.
Oh, and now this is the same woman as before.
Right, and that, yeah. And that, I guess, is her way of surviving. She sort of just falls in with people, and maybe you can almost picture like a scenario in which she convinces some bad people to let her live and everything so she can help them bring in more people.
She's the bait. I like this.
She's
the
bait.
She's like,
I actually like the fact they brought, it's the same girl.
Yeah, no, it is the same one from
yeah.
before, yeah.
I like that they brought her back.
Now you see, this pisses me off because, like, how could Solara not realize this is a trap? She's like, go.
Well, I mean, the idea is she's been sheltered and seen as this sort of held in this this little cage by guy who's in ultimate power in this town. Like,
okay,
that world, the most sheltered as possible.
Okay, if she's playing a shelter, I'll buy that. But if she's, my guess, if she's playing a sheltered person,
I like the fact that this girl is.
It's not an easy part to play. The shelter
tries to get her to leave.
Yeah,
has a somewhat if feeble moral code.
Right,
or moral.
She's remorseful in that moment.
She's trying to hang on to something
about that idea.
Okay, I mean the whole thing about her being essentially sheltered.
Well, she hasn't been out on the road. She doesn't know. She's been in this town her whole life. Her mother's there. Mother is with the guy in ultimate power.
Right.
Yeah, so she's basically the princess in that town.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, yeah, that's a good analogy. I like that. She's the princess
in the
town.
She's the princess.
Exactly.
You're right. Oh, man.
That would hurt.
That's got to hurt.
A lot.
I don't think it would kill you, though.
No, what? But you might go into shock.
Through your intestines and through your lower spine.
Or if it, like, ripped a testicle, for instance.
That would kill you.
Yeah.
You wouldn't. The other thing wouldn't kill you right away, but you'd die pretty quickly.
Well, you'd at least bleed out. I mean, so many arteries
bleed out, sepsis.
Well, it just basically went through his tailbone, his sphincter,
his intestines.
And possibly his genitalia.
Went
genitalia.
His genitals. Yeah.
His genitals.
So it's might graze the large colon, but
the genitals being cut like that. You could bleed out from that.
Yeah.
I mean,
There's not actually that much blood in your genitals.
Well, they're very vascular, though. I mean,
very small vessel. Believe it or not, your larger vessels are a little farther up and in.
Well, that would have gotten those.
Well, yeah, I mean, the femoral arteries go to the side of those.
Yeah.
That's true. I'm just saying it's a vascular area. But at the very least, he probably would have passed out from shock.
Probably.
Just having that trauma.
I'll just buy that he killed him.
He would have bled out later, because how are you going
to
recover
that? You don't
want to
be him.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And there she's upset.
Yeah, she's never witnessed anything like that before, probably. Or never been through that kind of trauma.
Well, she's never
victimized, probably.
She's never been victimized like that. She saw, she didn't see him kill everyone in the bar.
Man. No, but I think the victimized thing actually is probably more to the point. Because clearly
the
guy
that
rules the town has done bad things to people before.
Yeah. That's interesting. You can see the dried up river.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, that's all CG, but great CG.
It is a very nice looking film.
Oh,
well, and the CG, the cinematography, and the set design, set decoration, all come together to
The art direction.
The art direction. Thank you. I don't know why I was blanking on that term.
Oh, no, he says something in just a little bit. It's great.
Do you hear that?
Oh, I like it. Yeah, I was like, what's he doing? And remember, we have to remember, he's still blind.
Mm-hmm.
And she still doesn't.
This part tripped me out.
She doesn't know. It's like he's walking. She has no idea that he's blind.
Well, it's like...
Nice. Well... See, he's now making her his apprentice a little bit.
By the way, that was a little easy for her to do.
Yeah.
I mean, a bow with that many pounds of draw,
yeah,
she would have had to step on it and really kind of work for it.
All right.
It's okay, now that arrow looks a lot higher up in his back than it seemed to be.
Might be the angle.
Nudge, nudge.
Oh, mm-hmm. There we go. Yeah, yeah.
Starting to get the willies.
And he says, oh, he's just a fucking man. Oh, sure. Oh, well, that's interesting that he says that, because when he does put a bullet in him, he lasts a pretty damn long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the same thing, you could have talked the same way about Jesus when he was walking around. You know, there were times when a mob came to take him away, and he just walked through them like they couldn't see him. Hmm. Or, you know, different times people would plot to kill him, and he just happened to move just in time for them to not be able to get their hands on him. And it wasn't until it was supposed to happen that it happened.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Something interesting, too, I forgot to mention earlier, maybe we were talking about something else, is mm-hmm. that later they reveal that the Bibles were all destroyed because it was felt that they caused the apocalypse.
Oh, he said that before.
Did he say that before?
He's already said that, yeah.
Well, I mean, he alluded to it for sure.
Yeah.
But the fact, I just kind of put together that Gary Oldman's character is really convinced about that fact, that the Bible really was the reason for the downfall, and it's because it can be used to control minds.
Oh.
He doesn't really have a perspective of the Bible like he might have grown up with it or learned it or, you know, been a part of a religious group of any kind. It's more like he's got it in his mind, the propaganda about it that led to it being destroyed.
There's a spider on your bottle somewhere. A little spider was crawling around on your bottle. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's a gnat. I see it flying.
Oh, it's a gnat. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, it was a gnat, not a spider.
Okay.
So I find that interesting because obviously there are philosophical discussions you could have about the effect of the Bible as a religious text on the hearts and minds of people who, yes, are weak or desperate or,
which
you know,
is,
all
which
that.
Is what he's convinced of, mm-hmm. Yes.
And yes, people have used it clearly in the past to control, to affect. But there are also very good things in there, and it's just, I just put together that he's got the idea that it's bad, yet in you know, the Christian faith, the word isn't just a physical thing written on a page. It has its own life, its own power, its own supernatural sort of
well, that's not,
power
that's
to
not
it.
Exclusive
so,
to the
well,
Christian faith by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, that's, I mean...
I would have preferred this if
Judaism
he was carrying
Judaism
several,
has that too.
Like, carrying the Torah and the Quran and the Bible. It would have been nice, actually.
Hmm.
I actually do have a little bit of a problem with it being just the Bible.
Interesting.
Well, but,
it would seem more far-fetched to me for him to have multiple religious texts if they were all targeted.
But we don't know what part of the Bible this is, because remember, when he starts reciting it, he starts reciting Genesis, the first book of Moses, which is in all three of those. It's in the Bible, the Torah, and the Quran.
True.
I didn't know it was in the Quran.
Isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know if the Quran has any text that's in the Torah or the Pentateuch,
but it's the same stories, isn't it?
Oh, essentially all the books are the same.
Well, no. The Quran has a lot of different things. The Quran was essentially written either by people talking about Muhammad later,
right?
And it was a lot of stuff about Muhammad,
okay,
basically.
Right.
But they do draw a common lineage from events that are talked about in the Torah,
because there's their base,
right? So essentially, Abraham.
We don't know if this is, you know, New or Old Testament.
True. True.
It could just be Old Testament for all
except
we know.
Except that at
well,
the
actually,
very
no,
end,
know,
it's actually the bound version that they have up there is the whole Bible King James Version.
I take that back. I take it back completely. It has the cross on the front, so it is the New Testament.
Right, it's got to have the Christian text, and it's got to have the New
fine.
Testament
okay.
also.
But.
I get what you're saying.
But the point
I get what you're saying, Jim. I guess I hadn't thought about it in the context of, like, let's make it, I guess, equal for
well,
all
I wasn't
religions.
Trying to make it,
but I mean,
politically correct. My point
is,
all religious texts are essentially are essentially the same. I mean, they all serve a similar function. Every single religious book that I'm aware of has essentially the Ten Commandments and has the same sort of guidance.
The Quran doesn't, actually. It's got a lot of very specific stuff that doesn't always line up. Like, the principles behind the Ten Commandments are pretty well agreed upon by a lot of cultures, even just in law, even if you get aside from religious text. But I don't know that they're actually in the Quran. There's a lot of very interesting stuff about if you're Muslim, then you can do this to someone who's not Muslim. And, you know, you keep this with your Muslim brothers and then these other people. And, you know, there's some negative stuff in there about women.
Than the Bible, though. It talks about preaching and changing and what.
I mean, this is like the heart of the whole film. I'm just trying to put you guys. I mean, this is fascinating, but this is where he actually explains
the story.
How he came to find it, you know, after the flash, he came to find the book. And he was he was looking and he was led to the book, and then he heard a voice and said, do what the voice says. And this is where he lays it all out. And he's basically telling her that he's got help. He's got divine help.
Well,
he's laid out almost everything. In like the next scene when they're walking on the road, I would definitely want to point out where he says something where he's like, there it is. He states, practically tells her he's blind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And us, by extension. I like that they're in an abandoned nuclear reactor.
Oh, right.
Oh, and that shot of the establishing shot of those reactors in the background and the moon was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Beautiful piece of art.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, it occurred to me earlier, there are many times when she asks to read the book, and he says, no, you can't.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it actually takes on different meaning when later you find out it's in Braille.
That's right.
Literally, no, you can't. Even if you could read regular words, you can't.
But she can't, because then she'd find out that he was blind. And he doesn't want her
that
to know.
That, too. I mean, there's so many shades of meaning to it. Like,
absolutely.
Before, I kind of just took it as it's his special prize. He doesn't want anyone else to look at it kind of thing.
Right.
You know?
Well, exactly. And this is he.
Hello.
Hello, my name is Eli. He's such a great actor. Mm-hmm. He really is. Yes, Padawan, go to sleep.
What? Why cock the gun? Really?
I don't know. Agitated. I think I would sleep with it chambered regardless in that environment. I wouldn't want to have to take the time to chamber it.
No, of course not.
Right.
On top of which, you can put another round in the magazine after you chamber one.
I like this. We saw the shot where they were driving, and then he's like, he wakes up, and he's like, he knows they're coming.
Right? Yeah, he sort of has a sense about it or something.
Well, sense. God told him.
Yep.
I'm going with the spiritual.
Exactly. I like
that. I'm not shying away from it.
I like that.
See, I'm going with it.
You are. You're diving right in.
No, because, I mean, there's time to be coy and be mysterious, and it's time to just go all in. If you say, I'm going to go all in.
Mm-hmm.
See, for me, the whole thing of, okay, here you go. Do you know you're wrong? I walk by faith, not by sight. Boom. He just told her. He just told her right there. My point is that even the fact of, you know, if you accept that God in this film is telling him what to do, it's still a mystery. As long as it remains a mystery of some sort, you don't know how it's happening, you just know what it is. I think, you know, I still think...
I love that line about Johnny Cash. Sorry, I was listening to
it. Johnny Cash line is good. I know, because he mixes essentially scripture with Johnny Cash, which is great.
Or he kind of suggests that Johnny Cash is super, you know, religious and
prophet
in some way. I would agree
in some way.
I don't think I've listened to enough Johnny Cash to know.
Johnny Cash is awesome.
I like the music. I just don't know his volume of work enough. By the way, Jim, not to talk about what we were talking about earlier about the different books, but literally the Torah and the Bible, the Christian Bible, have the same text in them up to a certain point. Basically, the Torah is
the Old Testament,
the entire Old Testament, which you, I'm sure, know. But the Quran it definitely has a lot of different things. There are certain principles that are similar, but it also has a different sort of origin. And if you look at it as a historical document, it's not even as solid. If you're talking about, like, obviously there's a lot of extant copies and people have been keeping track of it, but, you know, in point of fact, like the earliest copy we have is a couple hundred years at least after Muhammad was alive, even. And it was
well, it's a relatively new book. And now, all of this being said, I am by no means an expert on the Quran or on the Muslim religion.
I've never been Muslim.
I want to be clear that, you know, I don't want to pretend as though I am. My understanding of the Quran is that most of the lessons and principles of it are the same as the Bible and the Torah, and similar to many of the principles in Buddhism and Hinduism as well.
Well,
most of them are about, they're basically social rules. You know, don't kill people, don't steal, important.
Were you talking about Deuteronomy?
No, I'm just saying that characterization, though, is way too oversimplified, because there are such distinct differences in the way that those principles are approached and in certain ways of discerning right and wrong between Buddhism and Hinduism, Muslim, and Christian and Jewish, because they have a different reason for why they do the things and how they make a judgment.
Though,
I mean, the source is different, so the things are different. I mean, it's just a gross oversimplification to say that they're all generally the same.
A gross oversimplification. But I think ultimately they're all books to base social behavior on. And the rules that they're usually or largely putting forth are the same. Don't kill,
but,
don't steal,
but that's what
don't
I'm
rape,
saying.
Don't hurt other people.
It's not just that. Like,
no, of course
Buddhism
it's not just
is
that.
Definitely a volume of stuff to tell you how to live your life, but then there are also qualifiers in the Quran and in the Bible that are more than that. It's about here's who God is and how God has pursued us, or how we are supposed to interact with God and thus how we interact with people. But it's still not just those social rules. It's also a history of stuff that happened. You know, it's not just a guidebook for behavior. It's a lot more
a mythology.
Stuff than
I mean,
that.
They all have
well,
a mythology.
I mean, that is an opinion. And
well, no,
I have
even,
a different
even
one.
A history is a mythology.
I have a different belief.
But even a history is a mythology.
Are you talking about just the term in terms of a story that happened long ago? Or
right, yeah, a story, yeah.
I mean, because I wouldn't agree with mythology as being fictitious in the context of the Bible.
Well, no,
that's not something I believe. But
yeah, I know that's not something you believe.
Okay.
But we differ on that.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
But and just to diverge very briefly, and then this is also, that was Dumbledore, right?
Oh,
yeah.
That was.
Oh, Christ.
I thought
you guys like picked up on it. That's
it's
Dumbledore.
What else
Dumbledore
has
that
woman
is a cannibal.
Been in? Hasn't she been, hasn't the woman been in
I don't
some Harry Potter also?
I don't
she
recognize
looks very
her.
Familiar.
I don't recognize her. I like how, I love how Ring My Bell is playing. In the
yeah, I know, right? On a gramophone, no less.
Fuck the China. Doing his good old American accent. He's armed to the teeth. Now, of course,
that was an interesting thing she said. Can you shoot a gun? Of course.
I'm just giving up on the consistency of her character. I like it. They have a logo on the megaphone. They didn't have to have it. It's like a Motorola.
You know, that's how it would be, though. I mean, you'd have random brands of stuff just around.
Of course.
And so it's creative how they kind of tie in. I hope somebody made money off of that, because it's way too blatant not to.
Oh.
Now, that's interesting. He actually... Oh, yeah, that's right. No,
we all
this,
think
is, this is the fake one.
We all think that he threw out the book. Now,
right.
This is shot really well. I mean, there's a lot of visual effects, but obviously they planned it.
Now, that was not Steadicam.
That camera, yes, that was Steadicam.
It's too shaky, no?
It's pretty shaky.
It's
I don't
pretty
know.
Shaky. I think
well,
it's
okay,
just
maybe
handheld.
It wasn't. Whatever it is, but the point is there's a lot of green screen going on
Dummy.
Here, and there's a lot. I mean, this whole sequence, they pull back. That car was CG.
Yep.
Well, actually, it was real, and then it turned into CG. And
oh, grubby parts.
That was a leg.
Meat.
That's right. while you're shooting the guns. Actually, Deuteronomy is all not. It has. I mean, yes, you can say it's about God's law about how you should live, but really, it was about living cleanly in the desert for 40 years.
Oh yeah, there's so much practical stuff about all of the many, many, you know, strictures of behavior and cleanliness and all that kind of thing. And it was put forward in a religious way, but a lot of it was practical.
Well, that's the thing. It's practical when it's necessary. Mm-hmm. That grenade, boom.
Nice.
It's just all nice, nice stunt work. And just,
oh, here's the RPG. Now it's a party.
That's right. Let's just, and they fall, of course, how they fall within and all that.
You know, I find
Did you notice also their names are George and Martha? Like,
I don't get the
George
reference.
And Washington. Washington.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. I just didn't pick up on that at all.
But that's from Virginia Woolf. Who's afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Virginia Woolf is what I was thinking. I wasn't thinking Washington.
In Virginia Woolf, they're called George and Martha after George and Martha Washington, too.
Oh, it is?
Totally.
Oh, I didn't know. I knew.
Oh, Albie was totally
of Virginia Woolf.
Albie was total about doing that. Oh, yeah.
Huh.
That's Edward Albee.
The fact they've got the safety sound on the backing up of the truck.
Yeah, I know, right?
What kind is this? Gatling gun.
Yeah, this is a Gatling gun. I mean, it's a crank fire. That would have been a Civil War like remake, basically.
You'd have a hard time finding one of those that works.
Or actually, more like World War One because it's got a magazine on the top.
That's interesting how they go right into the gun. And then all I kept on thinking of is Gary Oldman stepping in front of the gun.
I know, right? It's all about angles.
That's an awesome shot. Yeah,
with the whole house falling apart.
And this is a continuous shot, looks like. I mean, obviously.
The original shot was, who knows, there's a lot of CG elements
in
there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot.
But there was no blur, so it was a continuous shot of something.
It was beautiful.
In terms of the base part of the shot was.
Oh, yeah, and I love how they either put in or left in some lens flare there and everything.
Yeah, that lens flare was probably added. Yep.
Look at that.
Now, this was interesting because I was thinking, okay, so now, is he on autopilot? Is it just him? Is God talking to him right now?
It could be.
It's interesting.
Nothing's going on.
Well,
I mean,
that's the whole thing. Well, because
there
God
are
says,
times
just
even
go,
with a prophet that you
just,
don't hear.
You just go.
Yeah.
Also, it's interesting. Okay, you said it a few
radio
times.
Radio silent.
You said it a few times, and I didn't really pick it up. Is he a prophet, or is he just? He's carrying the word, is what he's doing. He's not bringing. He's not telling anyone anything they couldn't find out from the Bible.
Right. No, I'm using that term to mean a man with a holy quest that is sent by God to accomplish a purpose.
Oh, is that what a prophet means, as opposed to someone who knows things that will happen because God has told him?
Prophet can be many, many things. It can be the guy standing on the street corner preaching doom, you know, or it can be someone that just has a real specific thing that they do one time that makes a point, and then they don't show up anymore.
Okay.
You know, there are a lot of different shades of being a prophet, and I think this qualifies as, you know, he's
in that respect,
he's
absolutely.
You know, taking, he's doing something God's telling him to do,
absolutely,
that has an ultimate goal, and God is protecting him while he does it.
Right.
You know, pretty loose definition.
If that qualifies him as a prophet, then I would say he's a prophet. So in other words, he's just there. I like he says, you know, give him the book, please. He in some stupid ass way, he still respects him.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm thinking, just shoot Gary Oldman's character. Just do it.
Well, if they shoot him before they know where it is, how are they going to
Shoot Gary Oldman's character.
Oh, Gary Oldman. Oh, well.
Anyway, so it's like he...
What's a TV?
What's a TV? The what? Oh, there you go.
And this is where I was thinking that actually God was talking to him, that, you know, in his mind, as God was saying, let him have the book. I will protect you. You will survive this. You will get through this.
Yeah, it could be.
It may not be, because remember what he told to them? He says, when he says, the two of us will survive, and what about us? Oh, I missed that part. When he was in the house and they're about to come up, and he says, Denzel Washington's character says, Eli says about, we're going to you and I are going to survive.
Right. And the old man says, what about us?
And what'd he say? I don't know about you, or
something like, you didn't say anything about you.
Say anything about you.
I didn't
hear
anything about you or something like that.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Do you remember, Jim?
I don't.
It was just that subtle. It's interesting. So in other words, he knows he's going to survive. So getting back to this, he knows God said, "You will survive. It's not going to be easy, but this is disgusting part."
Right. And the lightning strike right then.
That was like four different cameras on that, yep. And then did a flash. Was there a lightning strike?
Yeah. Did you not see it in the background? Mm. Awesome.
Oh, and by the way, right now, no sounds. Yeah, no sounds. It's all sort of
what's the
white noise?
It's the gunshot. It's just very loud. There was a lightning strike.
Yeah, in the background.
Heat lightning. In this cloud right here.
I totally
in the
missed
top
that.
Right.
Oh, now I've got to see it a fourth time.
No, but you guys realize, like, all this time there's been emphasis
look at
on...
Him, look at him. Now, you'd think it's shock, because his eyes are wandering around.
Right.
Lost.
But it's not. Oh, man.
Wow.
What is shock?
And he pulls out his pocket knife, like that's the last thing he has.
Because normally he'd be able to handle it, but obviously he's been shot.
Mm-hmm. Which also wouldn't make sense. There are a lot of times, if you read scripture about stuff that prophets go through, there are often down times when bad stuff happens to them and they're like literally complaining to God, what is this going on? This has got to be one of those moments for him. He's like, I thought I was going to be protected. I got shot.
You know, I will argue the point. I think he knows he's been told you'll be okay. It's just going to hurt.
Mm. But he's still human. He's
going to be painful.
Everybody doubts, no matter how sure they are about something.
But they never really... I never get the idea that he ever doubts God in this.
Mm.
It doesn't mean he doesn't. But they never express it. Which is interesting, because you're right. The Bible's all about doubting. It's all about God tells you this, do this, and it's all about, I doubt you. Mm-hmm. Da, 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 da. Okay, here.
Or about testing.
Well, but, right, well, right. But testing, yes, and that's, but it comes from doubt. It's like even Abraham.
Mm. He's one of the biggest examples of all that.
He says, pray for me. Oh, you are so evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that maybe he says, pray for me. Does he really mean it?
he says he needs it.
but going back to where you think, he is the king of lies. Mm. He wants, in other words, he doesn't understand what the word, as you would use it, the word is about. Because the word is about actually doing, I mean, it's, if you want, God's will.
Mm.
Whereas there he's saying, I'm going to use the word to do my will so I can survive and not do God's will. Mm-hmm. I will pervert the word. Is what he's saying,
right.
and this is where he's like, this is going to be my salvation, but completely having nothing, being divorced completely from God,
mm-hmm.
only using the power that it gives. it's like the ring. It's like the ring in Lord of the Rings.
Right, the precious.
Here comes the
it
reveal.
And now this was interesting because
that's a nice
how they build this sequence. And I didn't want to cut you off, Duncan, but this goes back to now where she's becoming a bit of a Padawan.
Mm.
She's watching him. And he puts it there. They emphasize that, and she notices it.
Right.
And this is where she starts thinking. This is where she pulls this out. This is where I thought it was interesting, because she waited for that to happen, for him to pull it out and put it there.
Hmm.
Almost, buddy, like the idea was planted in her head at that moment, because we pull back here. She's strangling the guy, and then we have the nice stunt/CG work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice shot.
That's a great car roll.
Oh, it is.
But I mean, the camera in the car, then floating out above it.
Yeah.
Beautiful shot.
Absolutely. If that was CGI, it was like the best.
I mean, the shot started with them on the window, and then they pulled out.
Well, so that part had to be, but I mean, they might have done the car roll actual practical shot.
Yeah, I think it was. Now, she gets in the car. Because Ray Stevenson's on the other side. This is great.
Mm-hmm.
This is just pure... I'm going to get you. I'm going to be ingenious. Ah, the old CG grenade.
Nice.
Some great pyrotechnics.
And she runs. Yeah, that's...
That stunt person really... Oh, she did that stunt.
Yeah, this has got some really great action stuff in it.
The truck is beeping again.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Now, watch this. Look, because then we get to see... Here's Ray Stevenson. Oh, whatever. And the sword is through him.
Mm.
Like she knew. That's why we saw it. Either they were... I don't... You know, you could say they were planting that for us to know. But you can't tell me that that thing conveniently went into him. I'm saying there was some divine intervention there.
Sure, sure.
I'm thinking maybe there was just directorial intervention.
No, oh, come on, man. Let's stay with the suspension of disbelief with us. Come on, dude.
I think in the context of this, it was just it's just that kind of thing. And he clearly is. See, I wish this character was developed
and that was
a
interesting.
Bit more. Yeah, exactly.
He dying on his knees, facing the sun.
Smiling.
Mm-hmm. Eyes up, and then the head descends in prayer, essentially.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, because, it's a good point. Because, it's almost like he's looking for forgiveness or something at that point, or just looking to God like, I guess I'm coming now.
Yeah,
or
I think
something.
He has understanding.
But he's essentially, been expressing that he's been touched by, by Eli. He has been touched
by He gets
by
that
him.
Something's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Though that's I didn't even think about that, Jim. The whole dying kneeling thing. That's awesome.
Oh, totally. The way he died. Even the way he just grabbed her arm. He didn't try and kill her or anything like that.
Right.
He was just like.
Well, I mean, clearly he liked her. He wanted her in a way other than just some carnal.
But he wanted to get out of the car. That's why he grabbed her. He's like, let me get out of the car so you can essentially escape. In other words, and in that sense, it kind of becomes part of the plan, if you want. In other words, God said, get out of the car, let her go.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. Is that it's like God.
Intervening in that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could have just been sitting there dead in the seat.
The force, in other words, a little voice said.
Or he could have done something to harm her so she couldn't get away.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. Good point. You guys feel like that whole thing makes this less easy to believe as an actual story?
Well, I mean, once again, going back to the science fiction thing, I think as a science fiction, I think this is. It fits with the science fiction aspect in the sense that it's science fiction because it happens in the future.
Is that a blood trail? Is that what we're following?
No, it's a crack in the road. It's bad tarmac.
It's supernatural at all that he's walking after being shot there. I mean, where he was shot, that's right through the liver. I mean, you die pretty quick from that.
He's gut shot. It can take you 12, 15 hours.
Wasn't it higher?
Gut shot.
I mean, if it was lower in the guts, liver's
the right side.
I thought it was higher.
This was like right in the middle.
The liver covers kind of a center, like around the solar plexus here.
That's
pancreas. Liver's over here. Liver's on the right side.
Are you sure?
Pancreas is up here.
Yeah, liver's on the right side.
Man, I got to brush up on my anatomy.
Nothing's on the left side. Liver's on the right side. You got your stomach.
Lower.
You got your kidneys down lower and in the back. Anyway.
Well, how come the center ring is always right in the solar plexus then?
Yeah, solar
plexus. That
solar plexus is right there.
Part of the liver is right there.
Maybe the liver comes up kind of like, it becomes like that, but it's mostly on the right side. Hmm. And you have the pan.
Okay.
You check up on Grey's Anatomy when you get home.
Yeah.
After we do this, we'll check up on the internet.
What? What did we miss?
On Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, yeah, Grey's Anatomy, yeah.
That's the book.
I'll just watch episodes of Grey's Anatomy until they cover that.
Yeah.
Good luck on that one. Good lucky on that one. Here, this is interesting. This is where he said, I forgot to live by what I learned from it. What did he not do that he didn't live by it? What does he feel that he did wrong?
Believe that the word was with him? I'm not sure.
Did he have doubt? Oh, that he would do for others, that he would help her because he was shutting her out.
Right. Right.
When he
shutting her out, not helping. I mean, like, basically not serving others before yourselves, not loving others the same as yourself, maybe that kind of thing. I mean, it's the golden rule.
Well, they didn't play it up very well, but in watching it this time, when they're sitting in the nuclear cooling tower,
right.
And she says, "Teach me."
Mm-hmm.
And he looks up.
He denies her.
He
does deny her.
Yeah. And for a moment he pauses, and they move on from that. But interesting. That's a kind of a moment that maybe that's what he should be doing.
That's what. Yeah, that's what it is. She's been wanting to go with him, and he's been like resisting. No, you can't go on the road. No,
you can't. Quote, unquote,
you can't
read the book.
You can't protect yourself. You can't read the book. You're being a pain in my ass. He tried to lock her in the water place. Whereas maybe now he's realizing maybe that God wanted her to come all along the whole time, and
right,
that he was resisting the universe, as I like to say.
Right,
you know, the universe was saying, "Do this." Like, no. Like,
well, and I think that goes back to doubt, also. Like, and there obviously,
different,
I mean, you can look at major
kind of
historical
yeah.
events where people thought they were following what God was telling them, but they forgot to compare what they were doing with what's in the book, and what's in the book was a lot different than what they were doing,
right.
even as nobly motivated as it seemed to them.
Right.
Still today.
Yep. It doesn't stop.
All the
people
time.
Are people. People don't change.
Right. I'm sorry. Whenever anyone invokes and to no disrespect to you or anyone, you know, to anyone else who's, as you would put it, a believer, I just, when everyone starts invoking God with you, I'm just like, okay, the fact that you're even saying it, I'm sorry.
Right, because it's a real easy way to essentially justify anything that you want to do if you just kind of add God to your explanation for why are you doing this.
Right, and then, in which case you've already gone too far from you by just invoking that, which means, maybe I don't, I think you're a little wrongheaded about what you're doing no matter what.
Right, I mean, it definitely gives that impression. But again, I mean, to what he was saying, the whole point is, you go back to the book. You go back to the source. If it doesn't match up, you're off base.
Right.
You're not doing something.
It's interesting that he says that's it. It's like he's blind and he knows that it's over there.
Well, did you notice the quality of the clouds has changed now? Now we see blue sky, first time in the movie.
Well, because it's also it's by the coast.
Well, right. But I mean, for whatever reason,
symbolically too,
he may be able to. It's symbolic, and he may be able to sense that. He may be able to smell the ocean because it's salt water, right?
But I'm trying to take the side of it. I think God's telling him, go that way.
Absolutely. Like, I'm not trying to discount that whole element.
yeah, no.
But I'm starting to feel like there's a clanging bell over here.
You're really jumping in.
Well, because it's there. It's just
little latitude. Give the guy a little credit. He can smell it, too.
No, I think
I think it's funny that you keep bringing up the God did it thing, and I keep bringing up all the practical stuff. I find that ironic.
I know. It's just
again, see, art direction. He's freaking awesome. I just love the ship, the skeleton on the beach, like the whole thing.
Yep, and he's like pointed right at Alcatraz, and he knows to go there. He's just like, we're going in this direction, and he cannot see.
Yeah, and he's rowing now.
He's rowing.
Well, bear in mind, he's not alone either. I mean, she, what's out there?
No, I know.
You're right. They may not have shown.
But the way it's presented visually is that we are going in this direction, and she's following.
Right.
Now, I got to say, for all the wonderful job they did, I can still tell it's a green screen.
Yeah.
By the way, did you notice that it's the New York skyline, but the one building that you can still discern is the Chrysler building?
It's not New York. It's San Francisco.
Oh, it's San Francisco.
Buddy.
I mean, oh my gosh, what is my problem?
That's a
wasn't that a Chrysler building? No, that was CGI.
No, it's the Transamerica building.
It's a Transamerica building. I knew I recognized the building someplace.
That's Alcatraz.
Why did I have it in my mind that it was New York? I'm such a dummy sometimes.
Because you were thinking it was Planet of the Apes.
Clearly, because I watch that so often.
Well, you should.
Yeah.
Well, you'd say that. I knew you'd say that.
And he's like, okay, you got to take over now.
Right, west the whole time. Jeepers.
Okay, now we're getting to the closer part for the reveal. And this is where I'm going to start being picky. It's still on green screen. The thing is okay, this is the first time he's said
his name.
Yeah. And she's like, no, you don't.
Oh, look, there, he names himself.
And then he said, I have it in my possession. And she's like, she looked, like, no,
you don't.
You don't have the book. You gave it to them. What's going on?
Which made me assume that he had switched the inside.
Right.
Somehow, like, I figured he probably ditched the cover.
I actually thought that, too, originally.
Yeah, I thought he kept, like, a secret part of it, but that's where it led to. And it's all been built up too fine, and I don't mind it. Tom Waits is awesome.
Why is he shaking? Been eating a little people meat, right?
He's nervous that if he doesn't do it right, he's going to get shot.
No, remember, he's got an infection in his leg. He's starting to get a fever from that.
Who's shaking?
Gary
Oldman.
No.
The other guy.
Yeah, the guy
Here, I don't like the fact that they introduced Malcolm McDowell in this shot. It's just like, he's just talking and we pick him up. I wanted to see them get greeted like, welcome to Alcatraz.
Yeah.
That's where the problems start with me. It's just like underdirected in that. Did they not have the shot? They couldn't go back and get it?
On the other hand, wouldn't that have been just a little bit too obvious? Just a little bit
welcome to Alcatraz.
He's welcomed them. Everything that he's saying, that I'm welcoming you here. You have this Bible. Glad to have it here.
Right. It's almost like we missed the welcome somehow.
The welcome was...
As the audience, we
I think
missed it.
The
like,
welcome
happened,
was important
we missed
because
it.
There's another important thing that we miss soon, which really kind of pisses me off. I like the allusion to it. It's beat up. This is all very fine. And she's like, what are you still talking about? Because that's right, because we think that he has a copy that we're led to believe. The misdirection is we're led to believe that he hasn't. By the way, I like that shot,
shot
of the lock being locked.
Beautiful shot of the lock. I was going to say the same thing.
Nice second unit shot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think
I'm going to look at this first.
Do you think it was second unit or do you think it was computer?
No, that's too complicated of a close-up for a computer. Come on. I think it had to be second unit. I don't think CGI is that good yet.
It could have really practical. No, you can do all sorts of stuff. It could have been, I don't know, whichever was cheaper. I never really thought of CGI. Now, of course, we see what he sees.
Well, blank page. Blurry from our perspective, it looks like blank.
We think it looks like maybe he did do a switcheroo.
Right.
So we think now that he's got it and we don't know exactly what's going on, which I'm all fine with. He says a whole lot of it.
And his reaction is definitely
now he realizes,
definitely over the top compared to if it was blank.
Right. So in other words, he knows that it's Braille, and he's figured it out like that, unlike Serge. It's still at this point. I'm like,
well, I think they're still keeping you from knowing that it's Braille.
Right now, you don't know exactly, right. But in terms of revealing a story, that kind of, and then it's Braille, and so this is what I thought. I'm like, oh, it's Braille. Why is he upset? Okay, he can't read it. He doesn't have it. And I thought was that Eli knows how to read Braille. Somehow he found the Bible, and he taught himself how to read the Bible.
Which is reasonable.
I thought, of course he taught himself. Yeah. And that's the problem I have. There is no moment other than that says, I can't see. And we never see the moment where Mila Kunis' character realizes, oh my God, this dude has been blind the whole time. Holy crap. Now this is a great speech here because we have the camera moving in on him and he's reciting the first part of Genesis, the first few verses. And this is how he basically describes what the world is like now, what the world was like, but what it was before.
Yeah,
or he's saying
it's like,
or,
let's
or,
go all the way
or
back
basically
to the beginning.
Or basically he's saying that God essentially 30 years before said, let there be light.
And this is the first time, by the way, we see the pupils and the irises of his eyes look cloudy.
Right.
Before, you never really see that.
And he said, let there be light. Now, if you were with it somehow, because clearly me, unintelligent guy, wasn't with it and didn't get that at this point, he was saying that I was blinded in the flash. Totally did not get it. Not at all.
You think what he was saying just then
Absolutely.
Indicates that?
That's what he was saying. He was alluding to the fact that basically what he was saying. Now, interesting thing is we can say that maybe this is how he interprets it now, or that God has told him that basically God looked down on the world and said, let there be light, and I'm going to blind a whole bunch of people, including you.
But that was a direct quote from...
Yes, I know. The point is he was alluding to the fact that...
Oh, like just because it's the reveal is happening in that moment.
He said in a moment... There were several things. I think it was a really good moment because it was essentially alluding to the fact it was the poetry of it, the poetry of essentially the first few verses of Genesis and saying this is what happened in our life before, but then if you want to take it one step further, as we maybe have, that he was saying that... suggestion I get is that maybe God actually did look down on the world and said, whoop. We're gonna start it over in some kind of way.
Yeah.
It can be taken several different ways.
And I like that. I wonder if they meant that or if it just kind of came together that way as a sort of parallel.
I think it's an interesting way. I think it's really well written, that moment, that it could come that way. I love that she says, I've forgotten how to read.
And whether that's true or not,
doesn't make a difference.
Because she holds the cards.
No, but she knows that he's dying. Mm-hmm. And she knows that someone doesn't kill him first. Because in his quest for power...
She's so lovely.
In his quest for power, basically he sacrificed all of his men and all of his protection. He's got like one guy to protect him now. Everyone else is gone.
She can smell the infection.
Yep.
Dun, dun, dun.
See, this is a really interesting... In contrast to him, who could just like go up and touch him, she has to try and find him. And you see, the thing is that he sought out the book, but he sought out the book for the wrong reason. Oh, I like that. People were too scared to even say his name, which is an allusion to the devil,
right? Yeah, it is. Or, I mean, just fear for some deity that rules by intimidation.
Right.
Sort of like Voldemort, by the way.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because, you know who. They always say you know who. They never say Voldemort.
That's right. He whose name shall not be uttered. Or like in The Village. Those who...
That was a split diopter shot.
Oh, was it? Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, do you notice the books on the right side?
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice, nice.
Good call, man.
Oh, look. The bartender's hanging.
Right?
By his feet.
Oh, man. I didn't even notice that before. And the guy is just, he's just like, now here, the interesting thing is he takes a shell out of his pocket and he puts it into the gun.
Well, no, he puts it into the chamber.
No, it's not in the chamber.
They sell attachments that are plastic holders on the side that can hold an extra four or five shells. Okay. The magazine itself is underneath.
Oh, I see. Didn't know.
So it's like you run out, you can pull them straight from the side of the gun instead of reaching to a belt or a pocket.
Clearly, I don't know enough about guns.
Clearly. We shall have to educate.
Let's do some educating.
Denzel Washington was carrying H&K, I think it's a, what is it?
I love the music, by the way. This theme that's beginning at the end that we're at now. Mm-hmm. I really like this music.
Yeah, yeah.
Really like
great
the
music
theme.
Choice here.
I don't know why it reminds me of that movie from the 80s with the runners.
Chariots of Fire.
Chariots of Fire.
Oh, I like Vangelis and I hated that score. I hated that movie, but whatever.
You know, I've never seen Chariots of Fire and I feel ashamed of that because it is a classic.
It's worth a watch. Now he's shaved and everything. I'm like, oh, that's nice. And he's probably dying. And he's reciting the Bible, which he's... I still don't get that he's blind. There's nothing that says, and we still don't get to see the whole reveal with Mila Kunis.
Mm.
Unless, quite frankly, he never tells them and they never realize it.
It's possible.
I never thought of that. Okay, so maybe they don't get it just like I don't get it. Now, what he's reciting here, is he reciting part of scripture?
His prayer
at the end?
No,
that might have just been his personal prayer.
It's just written. I mean, unless it's like
I'm curious.
A very vernacular version of a psalm, but I don't know. Right. I don't think so.
Flower. I wonder what the symbolism of the flower was, other than just, it can work visually.
New life.
I guess. I thought there might have been something
else. Beauty, stuff we haven't seen the whole film.
Did these guys never realize that he was blind? By the way, I did want to say, everyone wears really cool shades in this film.
Right?
You know, imagine what a commodity pair of sunglasses is.
Yeah,
here's the thing is that, I know she says she's got to go back. And this, watching this again, it was just like, maybe now God is talking to her a little bit, and I think he does suggest this here. Thank you for the friend I made. Please watch over her as you watched over me. So I get the sense
she starts listening.
She becomes a prophet of sorts.
Yeah. Or missionary. Yeah, actually, you could say that, missionary. Too. If she has, it doesn't really show that she has a copy, but it would stand to reason. I mean, it suggested they were printing multiples.
Mm-hmm. Oh, true.
Why wouldn't she take one with her back to her home?
Oh, you're right. Absolutely. Okay, that's good. So she could be a prophet.
And probably some other books, I would guess.
But do they know that he was blind? Because
that's a really good question.
And that's the thing, is that if they knew he was blind, because then they would know what the real miracle of this all is, as opposed to, he just delivered the book. They realized that he was blind in delivering it.
And by the way, may I point out, the Torah, the Bible, the Quran, they have all of those.
Oh, good.
It was just that the Bible was, I guess, the lightning rod, because it was blamed for the apocalypse.
Well,
right?
And it is.
And it was destroyed.
It's the religion of this country.
Right.
I mean, the predominant
true, true, yeah. It's an American movie, so that makes sense.
It was interesting. In Denzel's final scene there, when we saw him, he was basically in a burial tunic.
Oh, he was, yes.
And shaved.
And shaved.
I hadn't thought of it as a burial tunic.
Oh, yes.
I thought of it as a
absolutely,
sort of
yeah.
Very, very religious,
Muslim,
but yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Looking.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Now, you know, I do have to make a point here.
Why does she disappear? Unless
symbolic,
it's just like,
dude.
Oh,
well, it's just the road is continuous, and
maybe,
this is going to be her life now.
Maybe it's showing that she has some kind of supernatural protection, and maybe God makes her invisible to some people at some times to keep her protected.
You know what? I like that one.
Let's go. You know, we can. Now I'm going
all
to the
in.
Religious explanation.
You want to go all in? I like it. See, but explain it. It explains what that is. Exactly.
I find it interesting, by the way, that Joel Silver was one of the producers. He generally does this is an action film, but he generally does a lot of different stuff. I've never really, I can't think of anything right now that he's done that had any majorly religious under or overtones per se. That, I mean, well, this is pretty blatant though. I mean, this is specifically talking about a Bible.
Okay, but going back to your
and quoting scripture and praying and stuff. I mean, the Matrix, you can draw a lot of allusions from, but
going back to your text that you sent to me, this is probably the only commercial spiritual, I will call it spiritual, or religious film that's around.
There is big budget like that this. Was actually given a wide distribution and everything. Absolutely.
And the reason
is big budget.
And but Joel Silver is also genre, and that's why
so
this
beautiful.
Is.
Oh, that's true. He
and,
is,
and that's why this was the whole religious spiritual aspect was able to be done because it was able to be worked into a sci-fi genre.
Mm-hmm.
So you use a sci-fi genre, and so then it then becomes the religion becomes the tropes that you can tell the story. Of that, because and then it can have its wider, deeper meaning, but it's a way to tell the story.
But I think science fiction is more often used to discuss social and ethical issues in a much more indirect way.
Well, that's
because,
the point.
For instance, using aliens to represent a race or an alien practice to represent some cultural thing that is a hot button in our current time or something like that. This is probably the most direct, use of the sci-fi genre to talk about it, but it's a very direct talking about, I guess. I mean, but you could probably debate all day about what does it really mean? What are they really trying to say about the Bible? Because they say a lot of bad things, and they also hold it on a pedestal like it's important, And also just the idea that,
let's talk about that.
As I like the Bible, as much as I live my life according to the idea that it's a divine text that God essentially wrote.
Right.
It also historically has probably taken the most blame for horrific acts. Honestly. I mean, you look at the Crusades, there were certain amounts of what the Nazis did that they pointed to the Bible and said, this is why we're doing it.
Sure.
I mean, all kinds of different kinds of male supremacy stuff. I mean,
male supremacy?
I mean,
white supremacy.
No. I mean, male dominance. I should say.
Oh, male dominance. Okay.
A lot of times you can attribute. I mean, a lot of people say, "Oh, I'm doing this like you're pointing out earlier because God told me to, because this is how we think the Bible says it is," and they're not really reading the whole thing. But clearly, this is suggesting that is, and I think that characteristic of the Bible makes it the most likely religious text to have a story like this or a backstory like that based on it, because it's only in even recent times that the Quran has even come up as something that causes people to do bad things to other people.
Right. Well, but also
people are the cause of that.
Yeah, people are the
of course.
But I think it makes sense in Western culture, which is predominantly, though not exclusively, Christian, that you would take the Christian Bible. But let's say, I'm sure, if there was a movie made somewhere in the Middle East where there's a lot of Muslim culture, if they were to do something like that, then I'd say, if they were ever to do anything like that, then they would look to the text that they had.
I don't know if they would,
because that involves, depictions of different things, and there's different sensitivities to that. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
For Muslim people or even Muslim-based people to make a movie about this that pointed to the Quran, they would have to either... I mean, it would basically make them a target for people who are very militant about those things.
But
right
it depends.
Now.
But actually,
might be a long time before that can happen.
Well, no, but I mean, there is, not like any religion, there are extremists and there are people who are very zealous, and then there are moderate people, and there are moderate Muslims out there.
Oh,
and there's a lot of debate as to as to what Islam is and how it conducts itself and all that kind of thing, and it's not a small religion. There's a lot of people in it, so there's obviously going to be different lines of thought. There's just the people who are more vociferous in their view have, taken to using violence to get their point across, when that's not always the case. to do that. I mean, there's, right. And, but that's once again, I mean, if you, you know.
Oh, I didn't mean to characterize the entire body of Muslim
believers. No, I'm not talking about you characterizing, but I know sometimes we may look at this or that, you know, as a religion as being monolithic, and no religion is monolithic, but there are certain voices that can obviously mm-hmm. express themselves more than others. It doesn't mean that there aren't issues, but usually the issues are with people.
Sure.
And it's the people using whatever. They could use the religion, they could use a pamphlet written by a guy next door to justify what is, you know, what they're
politics.
Going to use politics, anything. You know, mm-hmm. the point is that, in a way, what I was going to say is that it's interesting. Once again, going with the divine thing, if we're going to keep on running with it, I mean, here's basically God who has basically wound up the toy and said, here's the Bible or here's this, and can go, man, you do what you do with it.
Mm. Mm.
You know what? Some people are doing right. Some people are doing wrong. Mm-hmm. At some point, in little ways or whatever ways, I will step in. Or, I mean, this with this. Film says, I will step in and I will do this and I will do that and I will guide things to where they have to go. But I'll, you know, in many parts, you're on your own. And if you're messing it up because you're misinterpreting this and not as he says, you know, says there, I didn't go back to the book. I didn't pay attention to it. I was trying to protect it as opposed to actually listening to it. These are the things what happen. So in there, you get nice little life lessons out of this, well as, you know, mm-hmm. survival lessons for the post-apocalypse. But you do it within the structure of a religious or spiritual. Living that way, you actually get it laid out in this, which is kind of nice, you know, because not only that, because it talks about outside of spirituality, a moral view on the world, which mm-hmm. you can't have a moral view without, I mean, I will argue, without having necessarily a spiritual view.
Oh, absolutely,
you know,
and it
just often
definitions of the terms for sure.
It doesn't, you know, necessarily always apply, but I think you can have that.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and in a bigger, in a broad sense, I always like movies that make me think about stuff. You know, that make me really ponder something. And this does make me think about things that it applies to my personal faith for sure. But there are a lot of movies that do that. And I think this is good for that. And even though it had some moments when it was just a little underdone or overdone.
Yeah.
As a film.
Right.
As a film.
All in all, I think it's a beautiful film. I mean, I think visually gorgeous, and you know, I think the art direction was fantastic. The camera work was amazing.
Absolutely.
Some of the character development and character choices, and probably the scripting, was a little weak at times.
Yes.
But a lot of fun to watch.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And fun regardless of your, I think, your perspective on your religious perspective. I think mm-hmm. it's fun.
I feel as maybe, and now thing man, of course, this being now the third time I've seen it. I would have liked more, and I don't know, I can't tell you exactly how to do it, more of the plumbing of the religious aspect. I think maybe the Gary Oldman character could have been stretched out a little more. Maybe that was just, you know, the time they had, the script, working with Mr. Oldman. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Do you know if there's an extended cut of this? Or director's cut?
I think it's the only
or...
cut that there is right now.
Okay.
Yeah,
I kind of wonder if that stuff was on the editing room floor, or if it wasn't there, or what.
I don't know.
I can see it being there.
Do you have an idea of something that would have satisfied that desire of yours? That
no,
you would
that,
like
that,
to have seen?
That's what I was.
Character
well,
development.
Well,
I think,
character,
for me,
the weaker parts that I felt of the film had to do with Gary Oldman's character, Mila Kunis, and Solara. Mila Kunis's character.
Yeah, those two characters.
Those, mm-hmm. and a little bit of the Ray Stevenson character. They kind of stretched it a bit, and
yeah,
it just felt a little pulled
out. And that one.
And I felt Denzel Washington's character, just they did about as much as they could with it. And I don't know where quite the balance is, because at some point you have to say, you know, we got to wrap up this film. This film is like 2 hours long. We can't have too much in it.
True.
And it has to do with economizing and finding those situations and really, really tightening that up. And at a certain point, you know, you got to go. So
it would have been nice to see more of Gary Stevenson, you say? That's his name?
Ray Stevenson's
character arc.
I think his name,
it was clear they were trying...
Red Ridge was his name.
They were trying to make him a significant part of what was going on. And
I mean, they
him
wanted
having
to give
his,
him an arc.
Right, exactly.
And
some
it
part
was
of
not
arc.
A clear arc.
Right.
And I would like,
I felt
you're
like
right,
right.
I would like to have seen that.
I felt like we started in the middle of the arc someplace.
And Mila's character obviously had an arc, but it was truncated, like you said earlier. I don't think there wasn't enough
fleshed out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Enough time to see that development and that change.
I think it's a combination of script and her. I mean, she's a fine actress. I mean, kudos for you for getting the role and everything. And I think in some parts it worked fine. But I think, I don't know.
She was adequate. I don't know if she was very, you know, she wasn't particularly good in it. I just think she's beautiful. Look at it. Her eyes are wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think I don't want to
miscast. Pools of destiny.
I think I would have preferred someone else. You know, just to be able to carry the ball further and do something more.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing.
Now, I don't know. I haven't seen Black Swan, and I'm sure
it is hard to blame actors, especially when it's so close. Like, this wasn't far off, really.
No.
I mean, like, for instance, I mean,
why I think it's the writing. They did what they could with the writing, but the writing somehow, and I don't know if it has to do with where the arcs of the characters went, and they came in where they came and they did what they could. But you know, even then, when she was just like, "I just want to see the book," she felt out of place. Mm-hmm. She's like,
I can see your point. I can see your point.
It was a little,
shallow.
It is hard though.
It's whiny or something like whiny, but kind of a jappy thin. I think thin's a better word. I don't want to say it's whiny. It was thin in terms of her reaction. It didn't feel like it came from the gut. And I think it's an actor thing I'm picking up. It just felt like I didn't believe that moment.
Yeah,
you know, because when I'm directing actors,
interesting to see what a different actress would have done with that.
You know, you can I can tell. You know, you can tell when something's not is something they're doing it from somewhere else, but it's not really truly connected. What do I know? She's fabulously, you know, successful, and I wish her the best. I just felt it didn't really work for me.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see that.
All right.
Well,
that
seems
was just
like
me.
We've to round it all out. Maybe it's just me.
Well, you know what? It is just me. It ain't nothing else. Yeah.
Oh, and it's restarting for us. Because clearly the universe wants us to watch it again.
Yeah,
right, Serge?
You know what we do is we hit stop. my question for you, Duncan, is, you know, having watched this now again, I guess for the second or third time, I mean, and with us discussing it, does it give you any deeper insight, spiritual insight into stuff?
Well, you mean like life application?
I don't know.
Or into the film?
I think the film, but
does it
does it make you reflect in any positive way as a movie maybe should on your spirituality?
Yes. I mean, when you see people who, the most inspiring stories you ever hear in terms of faith are people who profess to be called by God, and then they set out to do something good that helps people, that affects people, that does something important, and hearing that they achieved it, and that you know, despite trials and travails, they were able to basically run the course and accomplish the goal. Those are the most inspiring stories to hear in terms of stories of faith. And this definitely is that. Even though it's fictitious, it's inspiring because it's a guy who is called by God to do something, you know, important, who knows all the reasons why God is sending him on this quest and all the things that it might accomplish in, you know, in the extended time, or how it might affect other people along the way. There are a myriad of things you could talk about in that way, but in point of fact, he accomplishes his goal. You know, he runs the course, he fights the good fight, and he comes to the end having accomplished what God called him to do. That's inspiring. And I think watching it, this is actually my second time watching the film.
Oh.
So I think watching it again, knowing about the blind thing, knowing kind of what the takeaway is kind of supposed to be, it did give me more, like, it made me look at it in a more religious way, and in a more, you know, what can I draw from this inspirationally? And I think stories like this always inspire a person to, I don't know, try harder, pray more, try to, you know, read the Bible and live by it, kind of thing. I mean,
be excellent to each other.
Right. Party on.
Well, they have a point.
No, you're right. Well, and that gets to the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you would have others do unto you, to do the King James
wording in all religions.
True.
Yeah, mostly.
Yeah.
In mostly. All religions.
Not all.
Yeah. Which one is it not common? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you is universal, pretty much.
Well, it's a universal ethical concept, for sure, but it doesn't occur in every religion. I don't believe Hinduism has that, and honestly, I don't believe that...
Well, Hinduism,
I don't believe
no, no, Hinduism
that,
does.
I don't believe that the Muslim religion has it in the context of everybody, because it's not a completely inclusive religion. There are certain exclusivities related to whether you're Muslim or not.
Well, that's so, true. So is Judaism, quite frankly. Yeah,
that's Judaism true does. Of all Christianity is extremely inclusive.
No.
So.
No.
It really is. If you know, I mean, I know you grew up Catholic, but Protestant
church,
is a different. Protestant is a different approach, and I mean, we could get into another debate about this for several hours. I don't know if this is the right context to do that. I mean, be great to talk about later, but I'm just saying, at the heart of it, it is because Christianity is the fulfillment, if you will, the culmination of all of the prophecies and all of the law and sacrificial chicanery of Judaism in Jesus being the ultimate sacrifice and dying once for all sin and including everyone, not just Jewish people. And that includes everybody can come. And we're supposed to, pray for our enemies and treat them well, as opposed to treat, an eye for an eye. That's no longer in Christianity. It's not supposed to be that way. We're supposed to love our enemies. We're supposed to treat everyone the way we want to be treated, whether they are Christian or not. And obviously, we all lose sight of that to one degree or another, in our lives throughout the day, in history, looking at a macro or a micro level, for sure. But at the heart, I'm talking about not necessarily what everybody does all the time, but at the heart.
This may be a perspective thing, much like most religion is. It may be a perspective thing. What the perspective of you and the way you incorporate the religion in your life, which is, God bless you.
he said sarcastically.
No. I mean, I'm just trying to make a point. That's awesome. I don't think. I mean, and that's again the problem with religion in general is much of it's subject to interpretation. Mm-hmm. But I think please have that perspective. I like the fact that that is the way you see it as inclusive and not divisive or
exclusive.
Exclusive. I know lots of people who don't see it that way.
Yeah,
and
so do I.
And unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's too bad that religion is that. And I don't begrudge anybody their religion. Whatever gives you the ability to go through your day and do right by others or do right to your family, by all means, use that.
Mm-hmm.
You hate to see any faith, used for
persecution.
To tear someone else down that doesn't see things your way.
Yeah. Right, but then that's man using...
Again, yes, absolutely.
Man using and man acting and using essentially the power of religion for man's own use as opposed to...
the excuse of religion.
Well, exactly. It's just using it as opposed to actually living it. I mean, his point is he needed to go back to... Mm-hmm. The word, so to speak, he needed to go back and read the Bible because he'd forgotten what it actually said.
And I think that any religion you look at, no person can really live up to any religion fully all the way. All of us have foibles. All of us are going to fall sometimes. All of us are going to misuse parts of it sometimes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter which one you're talking about. So
yeah, they're just they're guides. Guidebooks, hopefully, that what people will use to do good things and make the world a better place for themselves and everyone around them.
Mm.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I mean,
I agree.
As opposed to taking the word and twisting it for your own selfish gains.
But that's exactly what we got the example of that
exactly.
in this film. That's what happened with Gary Oldman's character. Mm-hmm. He twisted it around, and of course the message of the villain, like, oh, well, you're going to get shot in the leg and you get gangrene, and everyone's going to gang up, and you're going to die. And it ain't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So, we could keep on talking about this, but we really have to go.
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I enjoyed this movie.
This
was glad to see it again.
Great. Yeah.
Definitely.
So,
definitely.
Well, thank you very much, Duncan, and thank you very much, Jim.
My pleasure.
For coming out for our commentary of the Book of Eli, and we will see all of you out in Film Grok Land again next time. This has been Serge Del Pierre. See ya.